It seems like we're going to have an exciting time this morning. I thought we were almost done and just going to wish this thing through, but out of the woodwork has come enormous outpouring of wrath over certain issues, and so we're going to try and amend a few amendments here and listen to very little testimony. We'll go through the bill first, and then return for amendments. Yeah, Representative Hoisting, when you ask to take the podium, I think we're...
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will just make a few introductory comments about House File 1351, which is the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill. And then I'll call on Mr. Burris to go through where some of the included portions are, where they are, where you can find them in the bill, and just to help people get oriented. And on the topic of Mr. Burris, I really want to thank him, really from the bottom of my heart, and I think all of us in the committee and the public really ought to appreciate the hard work he's put in. I can't remember a time when we asked House Research to do major work on both the finance and policy bill that will be heard within 24 hours of each other. As you know, he's helped put together this bill over the last 24 hours, and at the same time has been working very hard to deal with some of the issues that will be in the finance bill tomorrow on the floor. So a Herculean task, and I, again, really, really appreciate how Mr. Burris has gone above and beyond the call of duty, and I think we really ought to really applaud him and thank him, because this is not an easy thing to do. Thank you. Excuse me. Oh, okay.
Both of it, yeah.
Thank you.
Chairman Reeder is making a speech to a chamber group, I think, this morning. So he will be along in an hour or so, depending on how many questions he gets. While we're waiting for Goal here, let's have the minutes of March 15th taken up. Representative Beard, would you move the minutes of March 15th?
Mr. Chairman, I move those minutes.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Minutes for 15 are adopted. Representative Madell, would you move the minutes of March 16th?
So moved.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. March 16th. Minutes adopted. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just a few introductory comments, and I'll have Mr. Burris go through the sections of the bill. In putting together this bill, most of the legislation that was laid over for possible inclusion is included. There are several provisions that either were not thoroughly heard or had fiscal impacts that we had questions or concerns about. We asked either the authors of the bill or the stakeholders involved in those bills to prepare amendments to strip out the fiscal impacts and keep the policy in there, and we will hear some of those amendments. Now, there are a number of fiscal notes. You'll notice that those are many of them are blank or have minimal allocations. There's no general fund money in the bill. Any finance-related questions will be addressed by the Finance Committee, where this bill will be referred to. We do have a few controversial provisions that are in. There are other controversial provisions that are offered as amendments. Where we had some areas of disagreement, we wanted to make sure at least those bills were heard, and we had a couple of bills that were actually heard twice in the full committee already. My MAC provision was recommended without was forwarded on without recommendation, and that's in the form of an amendment as well. But again, you'll see most of this stuff is straightforward policy. It's not controversial, where we do have controversy, and we're going to hear probably a little more today from the public. So on that, I'll just hand it over to Mr. Burris, unless there's questions of the committee, and he'll go through the bill.
Representative Hussein, I think we need a motion here.
Well, I'd move House File 1351 to be recommended to pass, and I think then we're going to the Finance Committee from there. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, in addition to that, I think you have to move the amendment here.
Okay. Actually, this is the DE2 amendment to House File 1351.
And the bill then to Finance.
Yes.
Thank you. All in favor of that motion?
Aye.
Opposition? All right. We're off and running. Mr. Bruce?
Mr. Chair and members, I will just touch on some of the provisions in various sections. I can certainly go into more detail if you want, but in the interest of brevity, I'll just hit on certain points that might be the main themes and specific provisions of note. Article 1 deals with transportation policy generally. It contains a number of housekeeping items from the agencies. Affects licenses, traffic regulations. There are also some reporting requirements and changes in planning requirements. I'll point to a couple of things. Section 8 contains a requirement for MnDOT to examine privatization transportation contracts. And then jumping a little ways forward to Section 24, this is a requirement for MnDOT to develop a strategic plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And the next couple of sections after that, we're pretty far into Article 1 at this point, there are required reports. That includes, in Section 27, a report on major highway projects, a study of transportation long-range solutions in Section 29, a study and report on speed limits in Section 30. Article 2 contains a couple of different towing-related provisions. It includes MnDOT's proposal to allow agency towing in the metropolitan area under certain circumstances. It also allows for retrieval of towed vehicle contents. It establishes a new account for deficiency claims for impound lot operators and has a couple of other towing-related provisions that relate as well to impound lot operators. Article 3 contains a number of different transit provisions. They largely center around some planning activities, special transportation service, and duties of the Metropolitan Council. Again, I can jump into more detail on what the specifics are in these areas if there are further questions. But otherwise, I'll just stay at a pretty high level here. Article 4 is Department of Public Safety agency provisions regarding registration plates, dealing with collector's plates and special plates changes. Article 5 contains a number of different provisions that relate to vehicle size, weight, and load restrictions. It raises per axle, per wheel, gross vehicle weight limits. It expands some exemptions in under certain circumstances relating to the various weight limits. It also sets up some new permits and permit requirements. Article 6 contains a number of different changes to commercial motor vehicles. This includes agency provisions, some changes to vehicle inspections, and some somewhat technical updates and clarifications. Article 7 is relating to household goods movers. Establishes a system of registration for household goods movers, shifting away from the system of permits. Article 8 goes somewhat hand in hand with that. It contains a lot of the conforming changes for household goods movers. The two articles together also involve removal and repeal of permits that are no longer used by MnDOT. Article 9 relates to railroads. This is essentially the Railroad Walkway Safety Act. And finally, Article 10 is the best value contracting provisions. That, Mr. Chair, is the high-level summary.
Thank you, Mr. Wiz. Are there any questions from members thus far? Well, the first bill that we will be looking at then is, or the first amendment would be House File 1756. That makes sense? Anybody? Oh, Representative Hartman is not here. Maybe we're going to wait then. Anybody is here? Since Representative Hartman is not here yet, we'll move to 1611, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Mr. Shetman.
An amendment to this, too?
Mr. Chair, members, well, Mr. Shetman is making his way down. This is a provision that was passed in local government, and we'd like it. I think it's appropriately in the transportation policy omnibus bill, and it relates to light rail transit governance changes. This is a bill that has consensus between the Met Council and MnDOT, which are the stakeholders in this particular initiative. It just transfers some responsibilities for light rail governance and related issues to the Metropolitan Council, and I'll have Mr. Shetman explain it, but there was this provision is non-controversial, but I think also important. So Mr. Shetman will explain the bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and Representative Hornstein is correct. This is an agency initiative that was heard in the local government committee, and it was passed to the floor. I talked to Representative Hornstein and asked that we could potentially take this up today in the omnibus transportation policy bill. And current law has MnDOT as the constructor of light rail and the Metropolitan Council as the operator of light rail. The council, the governor, MnDOT, we've discussed this, and we would like to allow the governor to have the Metropolitan Council as both the constructor and the operator of light rail in the metropolitan area. We're doing this because it more clearly defines the lines of who will be the lead or the responsible party for these light rail lines. As you know, the FTA, when we are in the process of building and constructing and operating these lines, are very curious to see who the lead agency will be in this, certainly streamlines that, and the governor's office and MnDOT and the council are all in agreement on that. The members of the Central Corridor Management Committee, which are made up of county commissioners from Ramsey County, Hennepin County, City of Minneapolis, City of St. Paul, the University of Minnesota, and others and business groups are all in agreement on this legislation as well. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Mr. Shetman, what's kind of a buffer?
Buffer one?
Huh?
Padding?
Oh, a pad.
Yeah, that went over well last night.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Shetman, on page 7, section 6, does this mean that the Met Council can exercise its power to raise revenue in order to construct light rail?
Mr. Shetman?
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, I don't believe so. I think that for us to raise
Mr. Chair, I'm asking you, Met Council has very broad authority to raise revenue within the seven-county metro area. And as I read this, it says you can exercise the powers granted the chapter and in other applicable law as necessary, so very broad, to plan, design, acquire, construct, and equip.
Mr. Chairman, is that any different than the powers they have now?
Mr. Chair, they don't have the authority to raise taxes to build light rail right now.
Mr.
Chair, and Representative Holberg, I don't believe that will allow us to raise revenue. How we raise our revenue is we receive legislative authority as far as our regional transit bonding. But as far as our operations, we get our money from the general fund, we get it from MVEST, we get it from the federal money, but I don't believe that this will allow us to raise any revenue, and if that is the case, that is not the intent of this bill.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, would you be willing to look at some language that would make it very clear that they were not allowed to use their taxing authority for these purposes?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I'm certainly very open to clarifying that language as we move through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think it's an important point. We want to make sure that the Met Council's taxing authority is understood clearly by all.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, we're fine with that.
Thank you.
Is there any more discussion on House File 6211? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to understand this a little bit. Mr. Shelton, do you have expertise on staff to do this work, or are you going to have to, or are you planning on moving someone from MnDOT, or how's the staffing all going to work on this thing? And who's going to pay for it? That's what I'm...
Mr. Shelton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, the staffing actually works out very well. Right now we've got a project office. We had a project office for the Iowa Light Rail Line. We have a project office for the North Star Commuter Rail Line, and we have a project office for the Central Corridor Light Rail Line. And the staffing on that will remain the same. Actually, right now, the gentleman by the name of Mark Herman, who you may be familiar with in this committee, is the project director for that. He is a representative of Met Council. He also works on the North Star Line, and since he is a Met Council person, like when I talked about streamlining between Met Council, MnDOT, and the governor's office, what this is a one-point person. We go to that project office, and the real intention is that it makes it much easier for us to work with the federal grantee as the grant recipient for this, the Met Council. It allows us to just work through that one central corridor management office in order to do this. So it is really streamlining, and that project office is already set up.
Yep. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions or comments? If not, all those in favor of 1611, please signify by aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 1611 is adopted.
Thank you.
Let's see. What? Okay. Representative Hornstein, I understand you are doing 1049.
That's correct. This is the, Mr. Chair and members, 1049 is a pipeline safety initiative. It's Representative Liebling's bill, and Charles Kienow is here and will present the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Charles Kino. I'm the administrator of the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety. What we have is a what I consider a technical amendment to bring our code standards regarding penalties for pipeline violations in sync with the Federal Office of Pipeline Safety. Our office was created actually 20 years ago, this as a result of the Moundsview incident. by the legislature. And as part of that activity, our funding was determined by 50% of federal grant and 50% special revenue. What happens annually is we get audited by the Federal Office of Pipeline Safety. And one of the questions they ask is, how does our codes relate to the federal ones? So there's a uniform inspection process across all the states for both interstate and intrastate pipelines. The one part of this code that does not meet the current federal standards is the penalties, which have been raised by the Department of Transportation in 2005. Our penalties actually have not been raised since 1987, when the original law was passed with regard to that. So if we do not match the standards, we have the possibility of very likely losing points on our audit, which will affect the amount of federal grant that we receive. So the purpose of this bill is to bring the state penalties in line with the federal ones, so there'll be uniform enforcement of the violations of the Pipeline Safety Act. I would say that Minnesota has, this is the maximum amount. The discretion on these penalties is up to the director, the commissioner. It can be appealed to the commissioner if there's concern over that. And there's also an appeal mechanism from that to administrative law judges. So that would be, that's the main intent of this, to bring this in line with the federal office standards.
Are there questions? Representative Holder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, if you know, why didn't Representative Liebling get this to civil law so that they could view the civil penalty issue involved here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm not sure. Actually, it was originally referred to the committee that has to do with public safety, and rather than here directly, so it was actually heard there, and then it was referred over here from that committee.
Well, Mr. Chair, the copy of the bill I have in front of me shows that it was introduced on February 15th and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if that's I know there was one hearing already heard. I didn't participate in that hearing. I would say that, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say in the Senate, the bill was referred to Judiciary and was heard yesterday and passed directly to the consent calendar in the Senate.
Well, Representative Holder, I understand that public safety did not want this. Now, is that who we're talking about?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess it would depend on if it was the public safety finance or if it was public safety and civil justice or whatever. Representative Mullery's committee.
Representative Mullery did not want it.
Okay.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am glad it's here because it's a transportation issue, and I'm interested in Mr. Is it Skinow?
Kino.
Okay. About how your office interacts with the Federal Office of Pipeline Safety. Are you an extension of them, or do you duplicate their efforts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have an agreement under the, when our office was set up, the legislature required us to seek federal interstate authority for the ability to inspect all pipelines within Minnesota. So we've developed the expertise and the staff to actually do the inspections on interstate pipelines for the federal government. That's part of our federal grant that we receive.
So you do them instead of
the federal office.
There aren't federal guys running around ahead of you in your
program. Right, they're not. In fact, they have, since we have a quality program here, they really don't come to Minnesota very often, except to audit us. So.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? If not, all those in favor of House File 1049, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Post the same sign. 1049 is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you.
Representative Hoytman, are you alive and well this morning, and you want to tackle 1756 as an amendment?
Sure, Mr. Chair. Does everybody have a copy of the bill?
1756.
Mr. Chair, for some reason, House File 1756 was referred to the Public Safety Committee instead of this committee, and we had a hearing there, and it passed out unanimously. It is a technical type provision which changes the way that we issue salvage titles to vehicles. And what it does, basically the purpose, is to put Minnesota-based insurers and out-of-state insurers on equal footing with regard to issuing salvage certificates of title. And it also has something to do with requiring some electronic transmission of information. If anybody has any questions, there's two representatives from the Driver and Vehicle Services Department here to answer those questions.
Any questions or comments?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Beard.
Representative Hortman or whoever. What is the definition of high-value motor vehicle? Just what are we talking about there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I don't know. That is a part of the statute that's not being changed, so I don't know anything about that.
Mr. Chair, it looks like we might have a witness to speak to that.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Larry Olala. I'm the Vehicle Services Program Director for Driver and Vehicle Services, part of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair, Representative, the definition of a high-value vehicle is a vehicle that valued in excess of $5,000 prior to being damaged. Or there is another provision, I believe it's in a greater weight vehicle. It's either in excess of 16,000 or 26,000 pounds. So it would be a late model vehicle is a vehicle that's 6 years old or newer. Those are the ones that are subject to the salvage law. Also, then a vehicle, you could have a Corvette or a BMW that's older than that but is a higher value that could also be subject to the salvage law under 168A.
Thank you. So it is defined somewhere then. Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Yes, it's under 168A.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? All right, let's move to a vote on House File 1756. All in favor, please signify by aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 1756 is adopted. House File 2191. Representative Madar? Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. House File 2191 is also called a safe haven bill. And the amendment provides a cross-reference to Chapter 5B, which was enacted last year and creates a safe at-home address confidentiality program. It allows participants of the program to put their assigned addresses on their driver's license application and for DVS to print that address on their driver's license or state ID card. I do have Beth Frazier here from the Office of the Secretary of State to address any questions that you may have about this.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Frazier. I'm the Director of Governmental Affairs for the Secretary of State's Office. And I'd be happy to address any questions about the Safe Home Program or this bill.
Are there any questions or comments? Well, thank you for coming forth.
It was a good to see the Secretary of State. Wow. Wait, now, we have a question.
Oh, wait a minute. Don't go too far away. Magnus? Either for her or the department, what's the designated address mean? I'm trying to figure that out. If it's not my residence, what...
Mr. Chair.
What is it? Yeah.
Thank you. The Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program will assign participants in the program a post office box. And that will be their address for all intents and purposes, basically for the rest of the world. Only a couple staff in our office will know where they actually live. All of their mail will come to us, and we will forward it to them. This program is in existence in about 23 other states, and it's primarily for survivors of domestic violence who are literally fearful for their lives and need the protection that this would provide.
Mr. Chair, I do have Ms. McCormick here also to speak.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to have her talk. I'd like to see what the department says about it, too, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Carmen?
How many anticipate using the program? If you're going to handle their mail, I want to know how much it's going to cost and how many you think are going to be doing it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in Washington State, which is the program that's the most well-developed that we're modeling ours on, I think they have about 3,000 participants. We expect that we would start out with a smaller number and that participants would join throughout the years. We are talking to Representative Kahn about funding for this program, but if this committee has additional funds that you'd like to put into it, we would be happy.
We're going to let the money in the Trunk Highway Fund.
Everybody's
coming after
I
see today.
Well, what's
going on? Mr. Chair.
What is that good?
To the testifier or the witness or the author, I'm thinking about all the things we've developed an ID for. Dual identification for using credit cards, for instance, retail transactions, voting identification. Sometimes a P.O. box just isn't going to cut it. How are we going to make this work? How does it impact that those areas? I think I'm thinking of voter security, people that move. There's just a host of questions here. I'm sure people in Washington have already thought about it. It's been addressed. Working out okay?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services for the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Just to respond to Representative Beard's and Representative Magnus's concerns, the department already has a program where we allow alternate addresses for anyone that files with us in terms of if they feel they're unsafe and do not want. So this is just allowing that information that we have to be able to be utilized. And so we have a place on our information system where we have the actual address so that we have that information, but we have a mailing address, and that address would be the address, which would be the post office box, which would be what would be used in this case. So it's just adding on to a program that's already in existence within Driver and Vehicle Services with our driver license program, so that it's able to be used for people that would fear having their address known but would want to vote and register for voting.
Okay.
The department is supportive of this language that's in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, thank you, Ms. McCormick. On the rare occasions when I've been stopped, I recall them asking me if that's my address. Do you, Mr. Magnus, do you live there? Of course, most of them know me anyway, but and they ought to know where I live. They do know where I live because they kind of watch it. But what do you do in that case? What do I answer them? And how does this work? What you mean? Why are they asking me this, number one, and number two, how do I answer that? That's the question.
I'm living in a P.O. box. What the heck?
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, our laws require that we have your actual address of where you live because we need that for law enforcement purposes. But law enforcement does understand our driving record and how to view it and understands what that means when there's an alternate address. So that certainly they're going to ask that standard question, but those addresses are not made public, and it's in a separate database so that only specific people would have access to that residence information. And so That's considered confidential information.
Are there any other questions or comments about House File 2191? If not, all in favor of House File 2191, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Pose same sign. House File 2191 is adopted. Subject Hortman, can you handle 1821, House File 1821?
With assistance, thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1821 was introduced very late and didn't get to this committee in time to be heard here. It's another technical amendment brought forward to me by Driver and Vehicle Services. I don't know precisely why they want to modify the definition of motorized foot scooter, but I'm sure they'll tell us. And there's also a provision dealing with title branding of vehicles that are Lemon Law vehicles. And my understanding from talking with Driver and Vehicle Services is that the auto dealers are okay with this language and, in fact, probably support it.
What?
Uh-oh. On this bill?
If I could defer to Mr. Elias.
Hola. Hola.
To briefly describe it, that would probably be better for the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, Larry Olala, Driver Vehicle Services. Thank you. Just maybe a quick overview of the several sections of this bill. The first section deals right now is it is not specific in statute that when you put a name on the title, that we only include one address. It asks for names and addresses for all owners on titles. Currently, our practice is that you only put one address. We can only send the title to one address, and that's what we do. So it's just a technical amendment to clear that. There's also a provision in that first section dealing with a Lemon Law brand. Currently, vehicles that are purchased by a manufacturer, because there's several problems with them and they go through a Lemon Law arbitration, are not branded, so subsequent owners are not necessarily aware that the vehicle had been repurchased as a Lemon Law vehicle. Sections 2 and 3 deal with the detachable postcard currently on the title. The postcard on the title currently is used when a seller sells a vehicle. They can either mail to us or they can notify us electronically that the vehicle has been sold. The problem that comes up with this is that because the postcard is a detachable document, our title stock has to be a paper stock that is allowed by the post office to be used as a postcard. So our title stock in Minnesota is basically different than virtually every other title within the country because there are other security items. This provision would still require the notification of sale. The person can either notify us electronically or they could mail that information into us. One of the complaints that we often get, too, is that people don't like their personal information being sent on a postcard so it can be viewed. Section 4 deals with a change right now if a sale is canceled where a dealer sells a vehicle. The statute requires that we get the title paperwork within 90 days. However, sometimes dealing with the buyer or dealer has difficulty doing that. This change makes it necessary that the dealer just notify us rather than actually send the title in. The Section 5 dealing with the foot scooter, this is an area that probably traffic safety was more concerned with because foot scooters aren't even registered as motor vehicles. However, a couple of years ago, with the proliferation of these small neighborhood-type scooters, there was a statute that allows them to be used in certain conditions. However, the way that the foot scooter was defined, if the wheel of the vehicle was less than I believe like 12 inches or so, there was no speed limit tied with that. So we're tying together the speed limit and the size of the wheel with that. So basically saying that the foot scooter cannot go more, I believe it's than 15 miles an hour, regardless of the size of the wheel.
Is this the last bit?
Section 6 also, I believe, deals with just the extension of that Lemon Law brand. And then Section 7 is an elimination of obsolete language. We've talked with the Pollution Control Agency. This deals with a statement made by sellers on the taking off the emissions, altering emissions equipment on a vehicle. It is still against the law to do that. It just doesn't have to be declared. This was put in place when it was more common, when we still had leaded and unleaded fuel and people were altering the size of their filler just to allow leaded fuel to still go in. Since we don't have the sale of leaded fuel as common anymore, it's obsolete language. And I stand for any questions.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the witness, I'm a little sensitized to the motor scooter thing, but I'm looking here that I thought we corrected that last year where we took the either or out because of that. It was a clumsy wording that allowed those little mini crotch rockets, I think we call them, that could go like blazes, but it had like 6-inch wheels or something. We certainly didn't intend those to be rolling along like bicycles. Did that change not make it into law in the policy bill last year? Didn't we have a policy bill?
Mr. Lola, policy bill last year crashed in conflict with the Senate, if I remember.
Okay, maybe that's what happened. This is the, because I thought I remember, this is a change that Senator Murphy and I tried to tuck in to help the department define what that meant. So
actually, I think there was a cause of the bill going down.
Well, then let's stick it in again, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lola.
Yes, this was the language that was last year that did not pass.
Was it a beer?
No, that satisfies my curiosity.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Policy history.
Seeing none, all those in favor of House File 1821, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. House File 1821 is adopted. Who's offering this? Medora. Okay. Representative Medora, I think you have an amendment, SCS 1986A1.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment to allow for a J-turn turnabout on Trunk Highway 169.
We have
1986A-1.
You have? Everyone have your amendment?
In the file.
Do we need an explanation of this, or how do you feel about this?
I'm sure this is, I'm not familiar with this project. I'm sure it's needed and important, but you know, we really do have a long-standing policy of not including specific projects in bills such as this. And again, I hope we can address some of these issues tomorrow more appropriately. And I as the author, I would as worthy as this appears to me, I would recommend that we vote it down.
Thank you. Representative Byrd?
Yeah, a little light on this because I'm pretty familiar with it. Several years ago, MnDOT moved ahead with a project to take out the traffic signal crossing in Belle Plaine with 169. It was basically a 65-mile-an-hour freeway, expressway, whatever we call it, with a traffic signal right in the middle of town. So they put a bunch of money into a beautiful overpass, which will be opening, I believe, later this summer to separate that traffic. The problem is they put a temporary light on the south end of town that everybody's grown quite fond of that's supposed to come out whenever the new overpass opens. But I think everybody's so fond of that traffic signal that Subdivision 4 here says we're going to keep it in there. And it is a temporary signal and pretty much defeats the purpose of the high-speed interchange anyhow. So the MnDOT had proposed with the County Highway Department when they took that signal out, which is down by Emmett Crumbie's, and you all probably know where that is, very popular spot, to put in something that's pretty popular actually in Michigan. It's called a J-turn. Henry Ford, I think, pioneered them, and if you've ever been to Detroit area and driven through J-turns, after you've been through them a couple times, you actually get used to them. They work quite well.
But people in Belle Plaine are in great angst about that. And the way I read the amendment here, Representative Medora, it's not to allow them to build a J-turn. It's pretty much to prohibit them from building a J-turn. So they want a task force, I guess, to study building another overpass so we get two of them in Belle Plaine instead of one, and no J-turns. We would have to respectfully agree with Representative Hornstein that this should not be adopted.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed because I was going to amend on Highway 14 to this.
It's the general principle that we don't earmark or designate projects, so I think Representative Hornstein is in the right mode here by suggesting that we vote this down. Any other questions or comments? All in favor of Amendment 1986-81, signified by aye. Opposed, same sign?
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Representative Morrow, House File Amendment A070543.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move Amendment A070543. This involves a noise barrier. I'm going to let the representative from Malview speak to this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the House Transportation Committee. My name is Aaron Backman. I'm the Economic Development Coordinator for the City of Moundsview. In House File 946, the Transportation and Finance Bill, it was approved by the Ways and Means Committee last night. Under Section 3, Transfer Subdivision 17, page 10, lines 10.9 through 10.12, includes the language that transfers $1,221,000 from the general fund to reimburse the fund for transfer of trunk highway land to the City of Moundsview. This amendment requests that these funds be reinvested in the I-35W area, serving the area communities in two ways. Number one, noise wall completion, and number two, system design and congestion mitigation. Following completion of the final connection between Trunk Highway 10 and I-35W in 1999, our car and truck traffic has increased markedly to 78,000 vehicles per day on Highway 10. This generates significant noise for us, particularly for our LaPorte Meadows and our Long Lake Road residents. Noise levels readings 2 years ago were regularly at 60 to mid-70 decibel range. At current levels, it is difficult to have conversations outside, and the sound does carry inside homes as well. This level of noise prompted 291 residents to sign a petition in August of 2001 indicating that traffic noise was adversely affecting them. The city has been working with the Department of Transportation to extend the noise abatement wall to address the problem facing the affected Moundsview residents. The total cost of the project is approximately $850,000. The City of Moundsview is requesting an additional $400,000 in trunk highway funds, recognizing the transfer of $1.2 million in general funds to complete the Medtronic land purchase transaction. We are asking that the balance of the general fund transfer amount be reinvested in solving freeway traffic problems in the area from Interstate 35W from Lexington through Interstate 694. This segment of I-35W has been studied, Trunk Highway 10 Inter-Regional Corridor Study, the I-35W IRC study, the Coalition Traffic Study, the Coalition Build-Out Study. All studies demonstrate that the I-35W Highway 10 weave segment is the key bottleneck in this link of the regional system that serves as the main portal from northern Minnesota commerce and transportation. The lack of a plan for the future, either in timing or detail for blending local access needs with regional mobility and safety needs, leaves communities and counties in limbo regarding, for example, marketing of redevelopment and economic growth projects in terms of business owners making reinvestment decisions and the like. Given the expansion of I-35W north of 694 is currently expected to cost $1 billion in many years in the future, interim solutions to the current congestion problems are urgently needed. Several bridges need to be replaced due to deteriorated conditions. traffic management, shoulder use, and other congestion mitigation measures may offer temporary relief. Those are the main points.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Mr. Chair, I need to actually, and I'm sorry, we're just figuring this out. I thank Representative Magnus for pointing it out to me. This amendment probably is not properly heard at this time because it amends House File 946, which is the Transportation Finance Bill that we'll be hearing on the House floor tomorrow. It is not amending the policy bill. So I do have to respectfully say that I don't think we can properly hear this amendment at this time.
And I guess I appreciate that. I mean, I like noise barriers, et cetera. But I guess I'd like to make a general announcement to folks that, you know, if people want to briefly discuss these things, this is a policy bill, and we really don't, it's not the time and place to discuss individual projects. That's been our longstanding policy, and so, you know, if there's a few more of these coming, you know, please let me know, and I can, you know, give advice appropriately.
And Mr. Chair, I believe at least what the conversation I had with Cheerleader recently is that he's going to have a meeting next week for the dog and pony shows for people that have to, you know, come in with their individual projects and have their people speak and get their picture for the paper. But I really respect Cheerleader's commitment to not do these special funding. What happens when this happens is that somebody else's project gets bumped. And MnDOT has a process for prioritizing its expenditures within these funds. We know they're very tight on money. We're trying to get the cross town done, a few other things, and this is just the wrong way to do business.
Representative Moore withdraws 870543.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
What's next? I have an amendment here, H1351A6, on ditch and culvert.
I'll offer this, Mr. Chair. I'd like to call in Kevin Begalke, who's the district administrator of the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District, and he's amending a section in the walkway bill, and I just call on him to very briefly explain, you know, once you get this out in the public, people see some opportunities. And Representative Holbrook.
And Mr. Chair, while he's coming up, you are actually adding, I believe, a new action in district court, a civil action. And so I don't think you want your bill going to civil law.
Okay. Why don't we do this, Mr. Chair? Let's have Mr. Begalke explain the amendment again very briefly, and if it's inappropriate, I'll pull it.
Mr. Begalke, where art thou? Not here.
I'm here.
You are here. All right, welcome.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Kevin Begalke. I'm the administrator for the Nine Mile Creek Watershed District. And we've been working with Mr. Hornstein regarding this amendment. It basically puts the same emphasis responsibilities to railroad authorities on the upkeep and maintenance for public safety of their culverts and bridges as it would with the state of Minnesota, a local government, or, you know, a county would have with maintaining their culverts. We're facing a situation where we're working with two different rail companies, CP Rail and Progressive Rail, on a particular culvert in the city of Bloomington. We've been working with them for a little over 2 years now, and we feel the culvert is in disrepair and a threat to public safety. We've run some watershed modeling and hydrology models to see what the impacts would be to homes and structures upstream of that culvert if it were to fail in a 10-year rain event, which is about 2.5 inches, and a 100-year rain event, which we've seen several 100-year rain events in this particular area within the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And the analysis shows that under worst-case scenario, if that structure were to fail and it would block Nine Mile Creek for up to 7 days, we'd have upwards of 96 homes that would be flooded, totaling about $21, $22 million worth of damage. One or two of the homes would actually be under up to 11 feet of water. So I would ask for your support. I was talking with a couple representatives from the railroads in the back, and I'm sure they'll have some words on this, but it basically requires their responsibility for year-round upkeep, maintenance, and structural stability of their bridges and culverts on a year-round basis.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I taking a second look at this, I guess I see Representative Holbrook's point, and I think this is a good amendment, but at this time it's probably not appropriate for our bill. But I will work with Mr. Bogalki and some of the others to see if there's an appropriate place for this this language in either a public safety bill, maybe in an environmental bill. But it's a real important issue, and I'm glad he brought it forward. But at this time, I think I'm going to have to withdraw the A6 amendment. So.
Representative Hornstein withdraws.
Thank you.
H1351A6. The next amendment that I have is H1351A7. Does anybody own up to that?
I don't have a copy. You may have to.
You recognize it?
Mr. Chair, I don't recognize this amendment. Are there committee members that it's hard to know what these amendments flying around? This is certainly not one of mine. I know I have a few out there.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to offer it and withdraw it.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Mr. Burris is refreshing my memory. This is a very, very boiled down, non-controversial, hopefully, iteration of the Krantz bill that we heard the other day, which is deals with the hazardous waste, hazmat issues, and the railroad. And I understand that there's been some good, positive conversation between Representative Krantz and the supporters of this and the railroads, and I think we're pretty close to some peace in the valley language here. So I don't know if I see Mr. Apex and Ms. Backus if they want to comment on this.
Mr. Apex.
Mr. Chairman, to the author. Yeah, we worked on this, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Appas. I'm with the law firm of Messer Van Kramer, and we represent the regional and short line railroads here.
Amber Backus, Leonard Stream Dynard, on behalf of Canadian Pacific Railway.
We've been working with Representative Krantz to kind of come to some understanding about this, and I think we're just about there. I see just one other slight amendment, and I'll tell you why in just a second. The last provision with regard to annual training for all employees who come in contact with hazardous materials and provides identification and response, there was a little provision added requiring at least 4 hours. Let me just say that's a little bit inconsistent with the federal standard, and what we'd be a little bit more comfortable with is if you just cited the federal standard for hazmat training. And the reason for this is one of the things we try to do is have consistency across the states, and that's why we've got a federal set of standards in place. I would suggest, if I might, to the author, line 3.8 would read to fail to have annual training sessions, delete of at least 4 hours, insert as required under CFR 172 paren H point subpart I.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that amendment.
For all employees.
Representative Holbrook moves. Yeah, we do repeat that so everyone has that little detail that we're looking at there.
Sure. line 3.8, after the word sessions, in delete of at least 4 hours, and insert as required under CFR 172 paren H and paren subpart I, as in Ignatius.
Representative, which one is first over?
No.
Okay.
Age before beauty.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Appitz, what is CFR and 172?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, fair question. Good question. That's the federal site, the requirement. That's the federal requirement. And I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I think the department ought to come up and tell you specifically. But that's the site in the federal register, in the federal code, to the required hazmat training for rail employees who come in contact with hazmat materials. So what it does, Mr. Chairman, is make it consistent with federal law. That's what we're trying to do here. Instead of creating a separate, different standard that may or may not work, it's the standard that all the railroads use.
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, I missed the preamble to this amendment. Is this an agreement between the parties, or is this the railroad suggestion?
This is the genesis of this, Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, is that when this or bill, as we had originally heard, was not included in the omnibus bill, I phoned Representative Prance and, you know, mentioned that there was certainly the fiscal issues we had some concerns about, but if they could work together with if the companies and the unions could work together to come up with some common ground policy language, I would be very, very open to having this conversation today. And I just, you know, Mr. Pauly just took a look at this. I know Mr. Knutson's been involved. And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, while I'm not certainly familiar with CFR 174, parenthetical H subdivision 1, I trust the parties have agreed to this, and I'm very supportive and open to including this in the bill.
Okay, and you're speaking specifically to this oral amendment that you knew about it, and the parties agreed to it.
Yeah. Mr. Pauly just reviewed it, and
thank you.
I feel comfortable with that.
Mr. Chair, and may I just suggest, Representative Hartman, this was language that Representative Franz kind of presented to both of us and said, well, what do you guys think? And he was kind of in the middle of putting those pieces together. This is different from another part that we talked about previously. This is a separate issue. There are two issues. We talked about another one otherwise, which is Article 9, which we still have major issues with. But this is something that I think all the parties can work with.
And Mr. Chair, Article 9 is not in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. My concern
is. I'm sorry, Article 9 is in the omnibus bill, but the other articles that were controversial in this original bill presented are not in this amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, my concern is just if the federal standard says that the training is for employees who will come in contact with hazardous materials, and with the railroad employees, we're looking for some training for employees who may come into contact. I just wonder if this kind of guts the whole thing. I don't know what's in CFR 172 either, but if they agree to it, then I'm okay with it. But I just wanted to raise that concern I had. If I could just help clarify that. In terms of the federal standards, hazmat employees
There's a long description of who those folks are. Loads, unloads, or handles hazmat, tests, conditions, repairs, modifies, marks, or otherwise represents packaging that qualifies for use in the transportation of hazmat, prepares hazmat for transportation, is responsible for safety of transporting hazmat, or operates a vehicle used to transport hazmat. In terms of the railroads, that covers a lot of folks. It covers everybody on the train crew, the engineers, conductors, the switching folks. It covers those folks in the billing department who might handle the shipping paper. It would even cover maintenance of way folks if they're driving a pickup truck and hauling gasoline or something in the back that has been quantities that would be hazmat. So that covers a lot of folks. There might be a few folks that aren't covered, but most of the railroads offer an annual safety program that has a modified version of some hazmat training, not as in-depth in this. And I should also say the federal standards require initial hazmat training with 90 days of being hired and then recurring every 3 years. So this actually surpasses the federal standard in that it's an annual training that is in this language.
Thank you. That's very helpful to know. The language that refers to people who transport hazmat, that is what I was looking for, and I appreciate that detail.
Representative Morgan. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just speaking in favor of Representative Holberg's amendment here. These are private companies that are engaged in interstate commerce, and maybe to Representative Hornstein, if the amendment does not prevail, first of all, we got 4 hours. I believe it would be paid time. Does it count towards hours of service? And what do we do with train crews that may be domiciled, say, in Iowa or Wisconsin, that come into town, go out of town? How do we handle those folks? I don't know how far. We used to have 100-mile territories, so I know that's changed. What about people that just start in one state, travel clear through to another state? How is all this addressed? And maybe it's even a rhetorical question, because what I'm doing, members, is pointing out why we have the Surface Transportation Board and the Federal Railway Administration to administer these rules, because they bring continuity, consistency, and uniformity across what amounts to a nationwide system of rails. This is interstate commerce we're dealing with, and I think that Representative Holberg's amendment makes the most sense to actually move this forward.
Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my only question is, we're going from at least 4 hours to citing a statute here. I'm wondering, what does that mean? Does that mean they get a handout, or does it mean it's classroom instruction? What sort of training? Because if I'm remembering from the testifiers, the issue is that they felt there was not a connection between the training that they were getting and the actual on-the-ground work that they were doing. So can you explain that to me?
Disagree with the characterization that was provided, that it's just as much as a 20-minute video, because talking with our railroad clients, I mean, it covers a lot of things. The federal law requires that it's general awareness, familiarization, function-specific training, safety, security awareness, in-depth security training if a security plan is required, and talking to the folks, that includes everything, like starting out with finding how to read the shipping papers, identify all the different chemicals, talk about switching trains, because there are regulations that talk about, or switching cars, to talk about the sequencing so you don't have two cars together that could cause a problem. It covers figuring out how to respond and how to use the emergency response guide. If there were an incident, it's pretty comprehensive in terms of what it is, and I guess we think of the mischaracterization that it would just be a 20-minute video. There is a lot more that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, again, I'm not going to argue the video. I'm just asking, does this mean that there will be a trainer coming to the facility, or some sort of a presentation done where folks are invited to come in and actually talk and not be given a handout or a video, that there's an actual training process that's part of this?
I'm sorry, yes, it is. The gentlemen who were here last, whenever we took this up before to talk about it, our actual trainers provide this training to the employees.
I think it, and as Ms. Zach has pointed out, MnDOT's hazmat representative came and talked in depth about the training that they had the other evening. So I feel comfortable with that, and I think if the railroads do as well, and the union.
Huh? Other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Beard brings up a good common sense point. You're dealing with interstate commerce here, And if Minnesota, I know we're rushing to try to put rules above and beyond everyone else and be the leader in everyone and create islands out here for us. I hope we've got some right way to get into the island anyway. Mr. Chairman, I don't know how we can move ahead with this with the A7 amendment, not knowing really what the federal regulations are and what this does to what effect this has on the interstate commerce of rail. I think it's a wrong way to do things, to sit down and think it through and not have the railroads turn around at our borders, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hornstein, you do have another railroad person who would like to testify in back of you, a railroad person.
Okay. Sure, and then I think I'd like to, I hope we can bring this to some closure. But, members, before Mr. Qualley comes to the table here, I do want to make sure that people understand that lines 3-3 through 3-7 is very good language, and I hope that lines 3-8 through 3-10, parenthetical 10, which seems to be getting a lot of the attention here, I hope that as we move through the process we can develop some a degree of comfort with it, because it's pretty unusual that we can get at least this much consensus, whereas 24 hours ago we didn't. So why doesn't Mr. Qualley talk briefly to this point, and then we can figure out the will of the committee in terms of how they'd like to proceed on this.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good morning. My name is Philip Qualley, State Legislative Director of the United Transportation Union, or the UTU. The UTU is the exclusive representative of the Trainmen's Yardmasters, Remote Control, Locomotive, and Switchman's Contracts. As to Representative Beard's questions, the training would be a part of hours of service. It is a standard part of a requirement of duty to be educated in the field that we work. Regarding interstate commerce, I don't see any impact negative on interstate commerce whatsoever. And by including, because of this is just a standard fixed piece of our training that occurs for our craft that needs to occur and has not been occurring. I regret to inform you that we're not getting the training that the federal government is saying that we're supposed to be getting under the TSA, Transportation Security Act. There's a lot of work moving in that direction, but we're not getting it at this time. And the final piece here is by citing Federal Code 172 and also at 100 and at 600, you're going into the federal level, Mr. Chairman, so I don't see an impact on interstate commerce when you're moving towards federal language and citing federal code in this bill. The UTU supports, was not a party to crafting this bill. The UTU has not been a part of moving this bill. It does impact our members. I think very good work has been done here, and we support this amendment. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and distinguished committee members.
If I may, Representative Qualley, to be clear, which amendment? Because we actually have an oral amendment on the floor that strikes at least 4 hours and references the CFR, the federal code, complying with the federal line. Is that what you're speaking in favor of, I hope?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, yes, peace in the family, whatever they've all come to agreement with, we support, and we think by citing federal code, you're making a very wise move. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, give me your name, please.
My name is David Brown. I'm a locomotive engineer for the last 14 years. I've been a railroad employee for 35-plus years. I represent the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen, and I thank you for allowing me to speak on these issues of what would happen if a crews from out of town would come into this area. On the railroads, we are trained that no matter what railroad we're under the operating code of rules for our particular railroad. If I go to work out of Fargo, North Dakota, and coming to Minnesota, I'm under the rules of the Minnesota. So I don't see any problem with workers being trained. That would be automatically taken care of by the individual railroads. As far as training, like Mr. my brother Qualley has stated that the federal code is a wonderful subject, but it still doesn't mix OSHA. OSHA and the FRA have joint jurisdiction over the railroad employees, and I don't see anything in here about OSHA's standards for training. I guess that's part of my conclusion here, that we're still sticking to the FRA standards, which is we're going to get a 20-minute video. We're going to get a 15-20-minute open book test on where to place the cars and how to place the cars. I still, in 35 years, I've not been ever trained by the railroad on what the particularities of a chemical is and how to respond properly to that to save myself and the public and to know what I'm dealing with in order to work with that situation properly.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I really appreciate the testifier's time. I do think that we refer this in subcommittee, and that the committee, I think, at this point may understand the Holberg Amendment.
You know, we could get involved here for hours on this subject, I'm sure, but I think that the bill as amended moves something forward here, if I'm hearing that correctly. We may not have dotted every I and crossed every T, but if we feel that what we are looking at here with the Holberg Amendment makes some sense, let's vote it up or down. And I would like to move that.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to ask for a vote on the Holberg Amendment.
Yes.
Is this changed, the Holberg Amendment?
Mr. Chair, I have a technical suggestion on the amendment to the amendment.
All right.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Mr. Chair, members, speaking of dotting I's and crossing T's, the oral amendment to the amendment, I'm suggesting that the new language read, as required under Code of Federal Regulations, comma, Title 49, comma, Part 172, parens H, comma, subpart I, comma.
Yes.
I believe that's a more accurate citation to Code of Federal Regulations.
Would you accept that as a substitute amendment, Representative Holder?
Gladly.
All right. Is there any other discussion on the Holberg Amendment? If not, all in favor of the Holberg Amendment, please signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. The amendment to the amendment, I guess. Are there any other questions on the 1A7 amendment as amended? If not, all those in favor of H1351A7, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. It's adopted. What do you want to do? Okay. I'm moving this on behalf of somebody. It's the 351A112 amendment. Which deals with page 9, section 17. We must have somebody that's interested in testifying about this. Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is the internet driving school issue. And my sense is that it's generally deleting it. Is that I just want to be clear for the committee that
I think you are
that's
correct.
What's before us here.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Steve Frank. I'm the president and CEO of AAA Minneapolis. And I believe in your packet you have something that has the AAA logo on it that just explains pretty briefly our feeling about this. Essentially, it's a really good idea, but it's an idea that's a little too early. NHTSA presently has some research in process about the efficacy of this kind of an approach. AAA research has shown that it's a great way to reinforce driver education. But our sense of it is that probably about a year from now is when we ought to be considering it, when we have a little more information in place about whether or not it's going to be an effective way to get to the in-licensure stage. A technical issue that we have with this bill is that the nature of the classroom work is being turned over to Commissioner of Public Safety rather than the Department of Education. It's not the content of the material that is as important as the efficacy of the actual method in which the information is being delivered. So we don't actually oppose it, but we certainly don't endorse it. I think it's an idea that's probably about 12 months too early and that we ought to be looking at it again in a year.
Other questions? Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, to the testifier, were you here the other day when we had the hearing on this issue by any chance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, I wasn't. I did see the materials from that presentation, and a principal proponent was a PhD whose name escapes me. And when I looked at the PhD's qualifications, he's actually the principal of a driver education business in the province of Alberta. So it was my sense that his interest in it was actually proposing the expansion of this as a business opportunity. I questioned whether or not he was really an impartial witness.
Representative Hardin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was in and out because I had a bill up in another committee, but what I saw and what I heard and what I know of my children and how they learn, I think that this, and what I know of myself and how I learn, I think that this is an idea whose time has come. And I think that we've been contacted by a number of driving schools who endorse it. We've been contacted by driving schools that oppose it. I think that it's a worthy proposal and it should be included in our omnibus policy bill.
Representative Ruth.
I think Representative Holbert is ahead of me. Go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just we had quite a lengthy hearing on this, and I don't know what the process is here today, but if we take testimony on every amendment, we will not get done by 11:30. But I reiterate very briefly, I would oppose this amendment. I came into the committee hearing planning to oppose Representative Simon's bill. Given the testimony, it brought back many memories of when my kids went through these programs, and I agree with Representative Hortman that this is a good thing. We should vote this amendment down.
Representative Ruth.
Mr. Chair, and I would support the amendment because I have heard from a number of people in smaller communities, smaller businesses, and they are very concerned about it, that it's going to be detrimental to their business.
Well, wait a minute. Representative Ruth, is detrimental? The
Mr.
bill as is detrimental, or the amendment is detrimental?
Mr. Chair, I'm speaking in favor of the amendment because
okay.
The small businesses are concerned about the internet business for two reasons. Number one, because of the safety issue, and secondly, because of the possibility of their businesses being damaged or hurt.
Wait a minute.
Mr.
Chair, just to that point, we can't make decisions around here based on whose business is going to survive or not. We need to make decisions based on what's good for the state of Minnesota, and I think this is a very viable option for parents to choose. Kids aren't going to choose. Parents are going to make the decision what type of course is appropriate for their kids, and I think parents should have the choice.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Representative Holbrook, Representative Morrow. Before her that we want to give people some limited opportunities to testify, but we had full-fledged hearings on this already. But I felt in deference to our colleague who's here, Representative Simon, just give him an opportunity to very, very briefly respond to this, and then I would think we could bring this to a vote or to some sort of closure. So if it's okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Simon is here, and he's agreed to be very brief.
I got to tell you one thing. Last night I got a phone call from a very excited driving school operator who was in opposition to this, and who said that a member of the state Department of Public Safety was not allowed to testify on whenever we did this, yesterday or the day before, I can't remember. And I said, I don't think that's possible. Now, I tried to contact him last night and this morning, and he's on vacation or something the other day. I talked to Pat McCormick this morning. She's going to talk to him. I'm not sure what the misunderstanding was, but it sounded like this individual had been told that the employee of the state was not to be involved in this. And I thought, well, they don't have to advocate, but they could be answering questions, and they should not be told not to if that is what actually happened. So that's why I'm bringing this up. That's why I thought we ought to have a little more discussion about this today.
And I agree, Mr. Chair.
We have Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's deadline day, so I'll be very brief in bullet point fashion. On the Department of Public Safety, I was at the hearing. I don't recall anyone being cut off. In fact, we've been working with the Department of Public Safety. They're the ones, at their request, who will be okaying this. So it won't go anywhere unless they give their stamp of approval. We already do this, members who weren't here for the committee hearing, we already do this for homeschool students. It's already an option for them. It's been underway in all the states where it is underway. It's been safe, it's been effective, it's been popular. Remember, this is not a mandate. There's zero cost to the state. This is just putting it on the menu of options. That's it. That's all. And a parent may choose not to send their kid to a particular driving school based on particular modes or modes of operation, but that's the parent's choice. This isn't a mandate at all. It's just an option. It's just something on the menu. I think that is all I have to say.
Okay. I think that talking to Ms. McCormick this morning is that they their position is that they don't support or object to this bill. If they would answer, they were here to be answering questions, if that be the case. Am I correct there? They're not going to testify for or against the bill. So I don't know what the statement was that you made about you've been working with them, maybe you have and maybe you haven't. I don't know, Ms. McCormick, if you have anything at all to add to this mess here.
Mr. Chair, she's coming down. I just want to clarify, a vote of no keeps the language in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Pat McCormick, Driver and Vehicle Services, and we've had discussions with the people that have been representing this issue in the legislature, just in terms of asking questions about our process and those kinds of things. So we had a meeting with them, but we told them right up front that we would not endorse it or oppose it, that it needed to be approved by the legislature, because the department, for one thing, needs to be objective, because we have to then determine whether this any particular vendor program would be appropriate, and this legislation would not assure that any particular program would be approved by our department. So we need to stay objective and then determine how the program meets the standards that we have in place for driver education.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments? If not, then let's move to the vote, which would, as indicated by Representative Moore, the yes vote on the amendment removes the section from the bill, and another vote would put the amendment down and the bill to remain the same. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same sign.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. We have a new amendment, H135188. And who claims that? Representative Hornstein? You don't have one. Oh, I didn't know. Is the leader been here all the time, or is he just different? Oh, he wants to take over?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hornstein.
This is mine. This is the paratransit legislation that we heard the other day. Representatives of the MS Society and others, City of Duluth weighed in. There was general consensus on the policy. There was a very large fiscal impact, and so what we that's why it wasn't included in the bill. I did ask council and others to really pare down the original legislation and include some provisions that would be policy oriented, and I think that this accomplishes that goal. If people have questions, Mr. Burris may be in a better position to go through the areas where we took the money out, as it were. So this is a more fiscally neutral way to at least get the ball rolling on some of the concerns that the paratransit community had about access, times, locations, and in terms of where people are being transported, et cetera. So just to refresh members, the memory of members, this is again the paratransit legislation brought to us by the MS Society.
Well, Mr. Hosey, is there a cost to this now or no? Are you taking the cost out? Or?
I'll defer, Mr. Chair and members, I'll defer to Mr. Burris a little on that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I can't actually speak to whether there is a cost now. This will necessitate a new fiscal note. There are provisions being removed that very likely would reduce the cost significantly, but I couldn't speak to whether the cost is now zero.
Mr. Chair, we have a brief testifier. My understanding is that when this is approved, we'll be going on to finance, and my understanding is that there is a little bit of a cost because there's a study required, but I'll have a representative from the MS Society address that specifically.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joel Yulin. I'm from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Minnesota chapter. That is a correct assessment. We tried to pare down the majority of the costs with this were related to what we were trying to put in enhancing transit services on the street. What we've done instead is that we've made just some changes in policy language. And then we believe that the fiscal impact is going to be probably in the area of the study that is in the last part of the bill. However, what we have done is that we are committed to continue to work with the MnDOT's Office of Transit and also with the MET Council. There's still some additional tweaks that we need to be probably making to this bill, and we'll have that ready for the next stop.
Well,
again, the original fiscal note was $200 million, and so now I think we're probably $150 million less than that, potentially. So that was the goal here. And that was the goal, and I think we're well on our way towards lessening the impact of it. I don't think people had a lot of concerns about the policy, quite frankly, at the hearing. But
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to hear from MnDOT. if they could testify.
Ms. Parker, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Donna Allen from, or I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT, Donna Allen from our transit office, and I met with Representative Hornstein, and I think we're okay with everything that is in this bill, except that I would like to express some concern about page 3, line 3, which requires us to do a plan that incorporates a minimum of service for 14 hours per day. It's not that we think that that's a bad idea. We think that would be a wonderful thing to be able to do. We just have some concern about the cost of that, and there needs to be some understanding that it might not be attainable, even though we can identify what it would take to do that. We have no problem with doing that. And maybe since I'm here, I'll just mention that Senator Dibble in the Senate, who has your companion, I think,
yeah,
also has an amendment that we had agreed to with the same caveat about this line, but I noticed that he retained the promotion or facilitation of a one-stop call center,
yeah,
which we thought was a good idea, and urging the county services to allow and facilitate service across county lines, which we also thought was a good idea because that's a problem now. So maybe, I guess I wouldn't object to putting this in the bill, but maybe we could keep talking,
yeah,
about it, because there were a few things that we thought were good ideas that I see are not in this.
To that, Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Mr. Chair and members, just for clarification, these provisions or previous versions of these provisions are currently in the omnibus bill, looking at pages 25, 26, around there. The one-stop call centers is currently in. It's section 5 on page 26.
So, Mr. Chair, I think there's some broad consensus then on moving forward, and I'm certainly willing to work with MnDOT and the Senate to you know, incorporate some of those changes as well.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, I guess the question I would have is this in the transportation finance bill as well?
I'm not aware of some of these policy provisions being incorporated in there, but maybe Representative Leader could comment further. I mean, this is new language that I brought forward at the hearing. So my understanding is probably not. But
Mr. Chair, to that point, this is a policy bill, and obviously it would be our desire to be able to expand services if we're fiscally able to do that. But I think then, as soon as we commit to being fiscally able to do that, it needs to be transferred into the finance side of the bill, because we do not, you know, out of this particular bill, are supposed to have dollars attached to this thing. So I guess I would hope that we could pull this out, unless we can make it fiscally neutral.
Well, I would think the Finance Committee would unburden this bill, this section from this bill, if there is a still a big cost on it. I mean, we should not be putting it in here, obviously. Senator Hornstein.
To respond, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stevenson, it's not our intention at all to start throwing around a bunch of unfunded mandates, and I think this provides a framework for how to move forward in a planning sense. I think the one outstanding fiscal issue is the one that Ms. Parker identified, which is line 3.3, and you know, I'm still willing to work with the MS Society and MnDOT to come up with some language that I think accomplishes both our intention as a legislature to identify the service hours of service as an issue, but also stay within, you know, the fiscal constraints of this bill. And also, Mr. Chairman, Representative Stevenson, I think that Representative Earhart is correct in that this goes to finance, so
there's anything really untoward from a finance point of view, that'll be addressed there. But, you know, all the parties are talking, and we've made a lot of progress since this bill was first heard.
Well, Governor Husker, I don't think we even know which of the provisions is going to be have money here, unless it's that $14 per day. And that's the big one. Otherwise, we should not have it in this policy bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
As I'm reading this, it's basically they're talking about establishing a plan, if I'm, maybe I'm wrong here, and a five-year plan to phase in the identified needs, and they're just asking that incorporate in that plan, the way I'm reading this, 14-hour service per day. So basically what they're telling us is that, at least the way I'm reading this, is the report that's going to come back to us is going to have this five-year plan, and it's going to have incorporated in that what it's going to cost to do that. And that's the way I'm reading. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's the way I'm reading here. So we're just trying to, when they're doing this plan, giving some criteria as to what to put into that plan.
Well, what is the cost of the study?
Yeah.
For one thing, I suppose.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that it might help the committee understand. This bill was just heard 2 days ago, and so the study was kind of a compromise that we came up with in the sense that we realized that we were not going to be able to implement enhanced transit services in this biennium. And so what we are looking at is to try to get this report. Because this is so new, I don't think the department has probably had time to put a cost onto that. As far as to the other point, as far as on line 3.3, it is our intention that we would be just trying to get a handle on what the numbers really are. I think as we've been talking with MnDOT and with the Metropolitan Council, one of the things that they recognize is that this is a real challenge to put together a solid fiscal note on this because this is such a larger issue. And so this isn't mandating that the legislature provide that service. It's just trying to get a better handle on the costs to provide that service.
This is not official, but I think we added up about $1 million worth of studies that we're putting into MnDOT's lap, and this one is no exception.
Yeah.
And that money comes out of trunk highway funds, so I don't have any general fund money. So there is a concern there about the studies we're just gallantly throwing their way. Mm-hmm. Ah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, the way I read it, it, the Metro Council or the Commissioner could agree if they take it out of their budget, but if it comes through with a fiscal note, we really can't put it in the in a policy bill.
Okay.
Wouldn't that be correct? Am I assuming correct that it indicates here it's a study or shall report by the Commissioner and the Metro Council combined, a cooperative study? And technically there's a cost, but if they agree to absorb it in their regular daily operations, I presume there's not a fiscal note in that sense, Representative Holmgren.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that point, there's already, I think, 6 studies in the bill. I think this would make 7. I guess from my perspective, there's a number of issues in this bill that I think are going to be problematic to the administration that could be worked on through conference committee or floor amendments. When I look at some of the other studies in the bill versus the one that's in this amendment, I would put a higher priority on the paratransit planning as opposed to some of the other things that are in the bill. So I'm going to support the amendment, but also have already had discussions with Representative Hornstein that he's going to have to get together with the administration and decide what's doable under current levels of funding, because I don't think they can do all of these without it having major impacts on delivering services and projects.
Representative Hubbard, even if we put a dime gas tax in, do you think that will help these studies?
Representative Earhart, I'm sure we'll get a chance to put a dime gas tax on the governor's desk, and I'm sure we'll have the same results as we did before, and then we'll be back to ground zero and really get talking.
Representative Hornstein.
Oh,
excuse me,
Hartman. No, I'm prepared to vote.
Oh, Anybody else? All right, let's move ahead then with a vote on 35188. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted.
Do you want to sit the chair, please? Do you want to?
Next amendment would be House File 735, which is Representative Reeder's amendment. What is this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, House File 735 was a department bill, which we heard, and inadvertently we didn't get it in here, and it's actually a bill that's needed from the department. It would provide that they could have access for geological surveys on private property if they contact the owner. It also made some changes in the bridge inspections. Right now, all bridges have to be inspected by at least someone, and most bridges are inspected at the county level by the county engineer. They also do inspect township bridges, and cities provide either through the county or through their own. They get them inspected, but this changes the inspection cycle on some bridges up from 1 year to 2 years, and other ones that are basically culverts to 4 years, and it also provides it in the event that there's some abandoned rail authority or rail that's bought up for trails. It allows it to be purchased or leased for 50-foot right-of-way rather than a 100-foot right-of-way. And the other thing, if there's some adjustment in the rail service improvement program, where it allows the participants to actually utilize some of the monies that they can get either by grant or loan to a larger degree rather than what they're limited to now, and they can spend it. And that's basically a summary, Mr. Chair. But we did have a hearing on it. We just didn't get in the bill.
Are there any questions or other comments on House File 735 as an amendment? If not, all those in favor of the amendment, House File 735, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. House File 735 is adopted as an amendment. House File H135111 is an amendment belonging to someone that. Anybody recognize that? The reference is page 6, line 26. Oh, this is the concrete pumps.
Mr. Chair, this is some just technical cleanup language for that MnDOT requested.
Okay.
I don't know. If
Mr. Chair, it is just a cleanup of the definition.
Eric Rundine is here if we need some explanation.
Mr. Rundine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Rundine with MnDOT Government Affairs. And the reason we need this amendment is that there's actually more than one liquid defined in that section of the Code of Federal Regulations, so it's just clarifying that this definition only applies to flammable liquid.
Any questions or comments? All those in favor of H135111, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. It's adopted.
No.
The next amendment is A-13.
Mr. Chair, we're assuming it's the one with additional writing on it.
What? We have to wait on that one. We're working on it. Oh, especially at work, Maria's doing her workshop crafting again, I see. This is a Hartman amendment, 072289.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Section 3 of House File 1095, and we included the other sections in the omnibus policy bill. And the counties and the townships would really like for us to include this provision as well. What this provision does is it extends the dates for traveling with heavy trucks on gravel roads to be 2 weeks longer than the dates that we set for bituminous roads. And the reason for that is the cost to repair the damage done takes away funding for other needed improvements, and haulers will just have to haul a few fewer pounds during that two-week period. And Mr. Chair, you know, we will be debating in detail the transportation finance issues, but a part of why the townships and the counties would like this is they don't have the funds to repair these gravel roads when people are driving on them when they're still soft and freezing and thawing and all that.
Mr. Chair.
I'll let you know.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to speak against the amendment. This was actually my bill originally, 1095. And after I had a chance to talk to my county engineer, who disagreed with the inclusion, saying that actually the township roads in at least my area were in pretty good shape, and I had a chance to talk to local township officers in my area who also spoke against this language, saying that, again, the restriction was too much and had too much of an effect on the, especially the ag industry in my area. So the concern that this was going to be a blanket statewide two-week expansion caused some deep concern.
Representative Hartman, I wonder if MnDOT would have anything to say on this. Is that who you advocating here?
Mr. Chair, the people who are advocating for the amendment are the Association of Minnesota Counties, and my understanding is the Association of Townships also supports the amendment. Carol Loverose here, if we have any questions for her.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record.
Ms. Loverose?
My name is Carol Lavroe with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And during the interim before session, the Association of Counties formed the weight limit task force in light of the fact that all the work that went in during the 2005 interim didn't result in MnDOT legislation to deal with weight limit issues. And there were specific issues pertaining to counties that we really wanted to work with the haulers on. And one of the provisions that is in the bill is extending all the 10-ton road limit to all paved and county-paved state aid highways and increasing, repealing the 73-280, going to 80,000 pounds to accommodate haulers so they're legal. And then repealing the 3-mile limit. This was part of the package. And so was the 2-week seasonal load limit. That went before the AMC General Assembly and was adopted by all 87 counties in December and was part of the original bill that Representative Morrow introduced. There are particular counties where this is not an issue, and Nicholl County that Representative Morrow represents is one of them, but there are many, many other counties where seasonal load limits for those 2 weeks are critical. You heard MnDOT testimony that they've done the research, that they've proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that those gravel roads need 2 weeks longer during this time of year to recover than paved roads. And while We understand haulers may have to haul a few pounds less during that time frame. I mean, we have worked with them. We're trying to build 10-ton roads. They're the ones we've seen a huge increase in heavier trucks in our ag areas. And we understand the need for 10-ton roads. But they also should be willing to preserve the current roads that they have and not impose that burden into all the taxpayers in that county. And we would really urge your support on this amendment.
Representative Moore.
Mr. Chair, and I thank Ms. Lovell for her testimony. I do want to mention that in the subcommittee, one proposal was to change the word shall in 3.11 to the word may. I believe that Chairman Leader offered that suggestion, but there was never a motion to make that amendment. But I do, Mr. Chair, would ask the committee's indulgence to allow Jerry Schoenfeld to speak to the other side of this issue on behalf of the agricultural groups, understanding that we do have some time constraints.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Pork Producers, Minnesota Soybean Growers. During the subcommittee hearing, there were every farm group, I think, came up in opposition to this provision. I guess what I tell you is this. First of all, we think in many cases the policy of this state relative to other issues. For instance, I work with pork producers. We have local decision-making with regard to zoning. And quite frankly, because of the restrictions that we have with regard to livestock through zoning, we are tended to forced to build in the worst road in the county. That's what it about amounts to. The reason for that is that there aren't many people who live in those kinds of roads. And so in order to keep livestock away from the population, we tend to be there in some of the poor roads. In some cases, we have members of our association that actually work with local townships where they actually pay additional funds into the township because they recognize that they have some damage to the roads, and they will pay for extra gravel, for instance, on those township roads. We would also say to you that this is, so what I'm saying to you is we think it should be left to a local decision. If they want to post them for another couple of weeks, mm-hmm. they should be allowed to do so rather than having a state commissioner make the determination automatically for an additional 2 weeks. We recognize that there can be damage, but we also recognize that there's variances between these roads, between townships, from one township to the other, depending upon the weather, how much rain they got, a lot of different things. And we think these are local decisions that should be made. When you take a look at the demands of agriculture, you have made some other areas in the bill that address that, but this goes a step backwards on that, and we would oppose this provision.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to speak in opposition to the amendment because I think that Mr. Schoenfeld has made some compelling remarks, and you just have to remember that agriculture is still our number one vocation in the state, and we need to help our farmers, and especially this becomes, I'm afraid, a metro-rural issue, and we're all state representatives, so I hope that we can realize that this would hurt our farmers.
Excuse me.
That's okay. I'm done.
Are you
in opposition?
You're in opposition. Okay, let's do it, Kevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would speak in opposition and not to have to restate what Representative Ruth stated very clearly, but just knowing that we've asked our property taxpayers to continue to take more and more of the burden, and if we can't get more aid for these roads, then this provision would mean real consequences to our townships, and I would oppose the amendment and urge other members to do so as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Actually, there's a question for Mr. Schoenfeld, if I might. Mr. Schoenfeld, it's been suggested to me that perhaps on line 3.11 of the amendment, we could strike the words "the commissioner" or "commissioner shall" and then insert "local officials may." Would that amendment work, or that change work?
Mr. Chairman, I think local officials may post at the present time, unless I'm mistaken, so I don't think that it's necessary to have an amendment at all in order to allow them to do so.
Yep, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Anybody can testify on the technicalities here?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
If I could just speak to the word may, my concern, and I don't know if MnDOT wants to weigh in or not on this, is that if we put may in there, that we remove this conflict from this room today and we send it over to MnDOT. And then MnDOT has to battle it out with the counties and the townships of whether or not they're going to set the date for the gravel roads 2 weeks longer than the date set for bituminous roads. And when I hear that there's something that's supported by the Assembly of the Association of Minnesota Counties and the townships, to me that's Major League Peace in the Valley. This is a group with very diverse interests. They've come together and they've asked us to move this provision forward. So I think if we're going to vote on it, we should vote on whether we're going to do it or not and not add may and shift the conflict over to MnDOT's offices. But they may have a different perspective on that.
Well, can somebody tell me if the dates are different for different parts of the state, or are they all declared on the same date? Because there's a wide variety in seasonal stuff in the state. Go ahead. Ms. Parker.
So Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT, the dates of spring load restrictions are not the same statewide. They don't necessarily go on statewide. They go on first in the southern part of the state and move northward as the frost starts to come out of the ground. They're already on in most of the state. I'm not sure about the northern part right now. The commissioner does set those dates based on a model we've developed using physical testing of the frost in the ground. It is, someone asked, I think, whether local units of government could set their own spring weight restrictions. State law in, I think it's in section 169.87, allows road authorities in, at all levels to post roads in order to protect them at any time of the year, at any weight that they feel is necessary to protect the road if it's in danger. That is sort of the fundamental bottom line law about weights on roads. The department does like the idea that there's uniform application of the two-week additional restriction on gravel roads because we have done physical testing in the field and we know that gravel roads are more in danger than other kinds of roads statewide. When we talked about this last year, I don't mean to belabor this, but one of the things we did talk about was that in a lot of cases there are township roads that might have one or two farms at the end of them and that in those cases, the county board or the township could issue a permit to someone who lived on that road to take heavy equipment over it if it were necessary to do so, but that the general restriction for the rest of the public would remain just as a way of trying to preserve the system, which we need increasingly to do since there are not enough funds to keep fixing things, and it's important to protect them.
In other words, I think of what I'm hearing from you, this is really not necessary.
Mr. Chairman, we do think it's necessary because gravel roads are different from paved roads.
Yeah.
The state will take the load restrictions off all of the paved roads generally after 8 weeks, but physical testing in the field shows that gravel roads take up to an additional 2 weeks to dry out. And so you really, in order to do what we thought was best, you do need sort of a two-tiered system, and that's why the gravel road proposal is 2 weeks longer than for the paved roads.
But what I understood you were saying, Ms. Parker, that the local option on posting roads was local option. So why do we have to now set in statute 2 weeks after something or other?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the answer to that is that it's very expensive for a local unit of government to post a road. They must go out and erect the sign. And when the posted period ends, they must go out and remove the sign. And then in addition, there's the difficulty of notifying people through email or on a website before they get to the sign with a load and discover they must turn around. MnDOT maintains a website and also a 24-hour call-in line about all of the road postings in the state. If you have a general rule, then everyone knows what it is and they don't have to wonder when they get to this township road, will it be posted or not?
I know.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. I just want to note that on March 9th, the commissioner did issue an executive order regarding road posting and seasonal weight restrictions for septic because of a concern of septic. So we do have the commission making individual decisions. That's why if we're going to do anything, and I prefer this be out, but rather have the word may than shall, because we could have a year-by-year difference. And we do have an instance of the commissioner doing it. And I received another email that was handed to me from another county engineer. Says, the day may come one spring when ethanol plants might be running short of corn to make a necessary fuel. Will we have to wait for an emergency executive order to let the plants get the fuel.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize to the committee having to run in and out to catch votes in other committees. I had this amendment reversed with the opposite amendment that would have extended the opportunity to continue to eat up our gravel road. So I do apologize for that, and I do support the amendment and appreciate the consideration of the committee.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one thing maybe the committee provided is by statutorily the road restrictions come on March 15th through May 20th unless it's posted otherwise. So there's some, and they normally, the local officials do post up or down or ahead and behind, but by statute they actually come on March 15th through May 20th.
Is there any, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess through the amendment, you know, the way we've got it situated right now, the counties are bearing the majority of the cost of repairing these roads, and the issue comes down to local control. When we start mandating from MnDOT how they're going to spend their dollars, which we aren't adequately funding them at this portion, we begin to handcuff their ability to fund those roads, because the agriculture that's taking place in these rural sections are the ones that are really subsidizing the township through taxes. And I think this comes to an issue of local control. And so I would oppose this amendment, because I think the way we've got it right now, they have a voice, the local growers have a voice in this, and if they want to destroy the roads, they're going to have to build them back up again, and they're not getting that much state help on this, so I would oppose this amendment.
Representative Moore, did you make an amendment, or did you just suggest
no,
that this
I
might
do
be
not offer a formal amendment.
All right, so we do not have anything but the 1DE2 amendment before us. Are we down on roads?
072289.
What? 072289. Oh, you are right. I'm looking at the next one. 072289. Are we done with the conversation on that? Okay. Representative Hartman, you want to say anything more?
No, I really would like to vote.
All in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
See a show of hands. All in favor?
You guys were good and loud.
4, 5. Okay. 5 we got?
5.
Opposed? We have more than enough for opposition. The amendment is not adopted.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Good buddy.
It is. I really do.
This is it. Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
You have...
I just have a brief oral amendment that I've been anxious about all morning. this is a suggestion that Representative Holberg made. This is an oral amendment on page 4, line 13. We've had quite a lot of discussion about this section already in Article 1 relates to the privatization contracts. We've had some areas from since the first hearing that we've had some agreement on, others that we haven't, but this is one where MnDOT and AFSCME agree, and I think Representative Holberg made a very good suggestion, so I'd like to just delete the word direct in line 13. Page 4. Delete the word direct.
Line
13. Yeah, maybe. Any more of a discussion on that? Is that kind of a technical or whatever? All in favor of the oral amendment, which is on page 4.13, eliminate direct. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I might as well, on in the same section, you got an immediate effective date, and given how contracts go out and the whole process associated with that, I would also wonder if Representative Hornstein would be willing to delete page 5, line 15. It would be very difficult for MnDOT to get all of their accounting practices realigned and across the delineation. I don't want this to slow down.
Can you give a reference to that again?
I'm sorry, page 5, line 15, it Representative Hornstein has an effective date the day following an enactment, and MnDOT will need startup time in order to delineate all these costs and do the comparative analysis. They're likely going to have to change some of their contracting standards in order to get the right numbers in the right categories from their contractors, and it's just not feasible for them to immediately, in the middle of the contracting season, change this.
Yeah, the suggested.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to delete the effective date of being immediately so that it would go into effect when the rest, you know, they give them 6 weeks or so.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I mean, I think I would consider that a friendly suggestion. I mean, if we want to have 6 weeks or something like that.
Don't we have to put in a date to substitute?
Mr. Chair, it would just become effective, I think, either July 1st or August 1st.
August
1st. Of 07.
Let's even give them another month. August 1st is fine.
Mr. Chair, we don't have to put that in the bill. It just is the default day.
Do you want to delete this section now?
Just line 15 on page 5. That's all we need to do.
We want to delete that. So you'll be making that motion.
I am, Mr. Chair.
I mean, we could say the section is effective August 1st, 2007, I think would accomplish
that. But, Mr. Chair, the other elements of the bill become effective that day. It would be redundant to put that in the bill because that's when it would become effective anyway.
If we don't have a date, I think it's August 1st.
It is.
Okay. I feel a little more comfortable just have that specific date even in here.
So. Okay, Mr. Chair, I'd amend my motion and say on page 5, line 15, delete everything after the word effective and insert August 1, 2007.
That's
the amendment, Representative Hornstein?
I'm fine with that, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any concerns about that? If not, all those in favor of August 1st for this section, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Adopted. Representative Moore, you have a technical amendment?
I do, Mr. Chair. On line 24, page 24, excuse me, members, line 26. The difference, it's under the effective date section, but the word act should be changed to article.
Anybody want to testify to that?
Page 24, line 26.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, this is my one mistake.
Mr. Chair, I was going to keep that quiet for Mr. Burris.
Okay, all in favor of that?
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That's it.
Chair?
Who called up?
Where
are
we? Article 1, Section 8. I'm wondering if we could hear from Ms. Parker again on that. I know we deleted direct,
on page four, but I just wondering if they still have some concerns about this area. So while we were just looking at that, is that okay? Would that be all right, Mr. Chair, if we went and had this
point out to the direct? Is that what you want to hear?
We did delete that, but I'm just wondering if there's still some opposition to this. We had a price tag of $160,000 on that study, so I would just like to hear from MnDOT their opinion of this.
Ms. Parker? Ms. Parker?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT. We do appreciate Representative Kornstein taking out the word direct, and also Representative Holberg's amendment to defer the effective date. Those help a lot. We are still opposed to all of the language in that section that requires us to do a written estimate of the cost of contracting out, and for those larger contracts not to contract out unless it's cheaper, just because it makes it more difficult to manage the department. And since you've heard all of this before, I won't go beyond that except to say that we still don't like it.
Mr. Chair. Ms. Parker, would you specify this? Do you mean the entire Section 8 or Section 8 or just the Subdivision 3? All of Subdivision 3, am I correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brewer, we dislike all of Section 8.
And Mr. Chair, I would move that we delete Section 8.
What page?
And this would be, it starts, Mr. Chair, on page 3 and on page 4. And that we move ahead. It seems a bit premature. And if we could just continue to work on these areas, and perhaps with the interim and come to a compromise.
Is there any discussion on Section 8? Representative Rook.
Mr. Chair, I think as Ms. Parker has stated and others have talked about, the price is $160,000, and this is one of six reports. It's a lot of extra work for MnDOT. It's dollars, as you pointed out too, Mr. Chair. When we add up the six reports, we're coming in excess of $1 million. It's money that's going to be taken away from Rome. And we just have to look at what's the most economical use, the best use of our dollars. And with MnDOT being opposed to this,
okay.
I'm hoping that members will take a good look at this and be willing to just delete this for the time being and let us be able to work on this over interim. I'm sure MnDOT would be very willing to work with Representative Hornstein.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, members, I would strongly oppose the oral amendment from Representative Ruth. This isn't simply a report. This is shedding light on a very, very serious issue where we heard from many employees that were concerned about outsourcing at MnDOT. And so rather than looking at this as a report, it's really an accountability mechanism. And so, we've heard this bill twice, and I think the issues have been aired, I think, very well, and we're very well aware of MnDOT's opposition, and we wouldn't expect them to embrace this necessarily. We've worked hard with the agency and with some members on this committee that have had concerns to take out some of the language that people felt was particularly strident, and we've accomplished that. Many of these bills, people can sit down and disagree. We've even had over the last 48 hours example after example of people coming to consensus, but once in a while we're not going to come to consensus, and that's fine. I mean, we're a diverse legislature. We have diverse views, and we're not going to always agree with the agencies. We're not always going to agree with each other. In large part, we have on this committee, but this is one example where we don't. And I think that, again, we've tried to accommodate the agency with and some of the opponents on this committee with getting out that 10% clause. We got out the direct costs. We moved up the effective date. you know, I'm certainly willing to work with people, you know that. But I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this and move forward. So, members, I would again strongly encourage a no vote here, and I don't think we need to replay the hours of hearings that we've already had on this.
Any other comments? We have to be out of here in less than an hour, so we're going to try and get done with the other few we have. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'm a little concerned. I realize there's some problems in here, but we had the debate twice, and they've cleaned it up some, and in my personal opinion, there's some areas that we certainly need as a legislative body to be aware of, and I don't know about the cost of the report. I know that's a problem, but I am a little concerned that if we take it out totally, I think we haven't addressed the problem. We couldn't be in worse shape than we were before. I realize it isn't 100%, but I think it's a step in the right direction to leave it in there.
Anything else? All right. We'll move to a vote on your amendment, Ruth's debate section 8. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The noes have it. The amendment is not adopted. A step out of line just briefly here. I'm going to refer House File 701 and House File 763 to Finance. I don't know if we need that. Do we need a vote on this?
Mr. Okay. Chair, yes. Could you tell me what bills those are?
House File 701 and 763 is what my script says.
What? Mr. Chair, I didn't see them in the packets, and I would just like to know which bills they are.
763 is Highway Contracts Regulation Modified, and 701 is Mankato District Transportation Headquarters Funding Provided.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You got any problems with those? Okay. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That takes place, and we have an oral amendment from Hartman. No?
Yeah, I don't
know.
What do you mean, no?
Well, I mean, you were looking surprised. I haven't heard from you for a while.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. It's going to be an oral amendment. I want to thank MnDOT for looking at this and helping me improve the language. Starting on page 11, line 26, in the next few pages, my House File 639 was incorporated into our omnibus transportation policy bill. But the problem was House File 639 had a fiscal note of $1.1 million. And so we're going to take out all the language that gave it a fiscal note, and then we're going to change some of the language to language that MnDOT is more pleased with. So I'm sorry to be doing this orally, but it's sort of a last-minute agreement on how to change the language. So at lines 11.31 and 11.32, the underlined language, strike that out. Line 12.4 and 12.5, the underlined language, strike that out. Line 12.21, at the end of the sentence, strike out the word and insert a semicolon. Line 12.22, change the period at the end of the sentence to the word and. And then we're adding a sentence after that word and.
open parentheses, 16, close parentheses, accomplish these goals with minimal impact on the environment, period. And I'll repeat that sentence. We'll read, and open paren 16, close paren, accomplish these goals with minimal impact on the environment, period.
Questions or comments?
I'm just, I have more. I'm just watching our research analyst, and when he stops writing, I keep talking.
Okay.
Line 12.31, change the word prevent to minimize. Yep. Page 12, line 31, change prevent to minimize. It's the first word after the number 3.
Mr. Chair,
I have one more change.
Representative Hartman, was your first change prevent to minimize actually on line 28? Because you said line 31 twice.
Yeah. No, line 12.31, change prevent to minimize.
She repeated it so that Matt
can get it. Oh, I'm sorry.
You have another?
I have one other one, and this one's easy. Page 14, strike lines 10 through 34. And page 15, strike lines 1 through 23.
So, well, we just delete section 23 and 24. Mr. Chair, I think we need to delete sections 23 and 24 so you don't lose current law.
Excuse me?
I think instead of strike the language, I think the motion should be delete sections 23 and 24 of the bill, just to take them out so existing law stays, and the new language is no longer in the bill, and then I think you'd have to delete lines 23 on page 15 for your effective date to get that out of there. Right, but if she can't say delete all these lines, we'll delete 23, 24.
Does that work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, on page 12, lines 4 to 5, the new language is being deleted. Could you lines 4 to 5, the new language is being deleted. Could you repeat what happens right after that, the next amendment change?
Page 12, lines 4 and 5, the new language is being deleted. The next change is page 12, line 21, getting rid of the and putting a semicolon. And then do you want me to do the next one or just that one?
After that, page 12, line 22, strike the period and insert semicolon and.
Correct. Mr. Chair, Representative Al Junkie will be very disappointed that MnDOT is not studying providing commuter rail to Wilmer, Duluth, Mankato, Winona, Rochester, and Northfield. However, this does get rid of the fiscal note. And we'll see if we can't get some study language in some other bill somewhere for Representative Junkie and me.
Are there questions or comments? No? Are we?
Deleting the sections? Is that
23 and 24? Sorry.
Bruce, do you have all of this?
No? Do you want to go through it again?
No,
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay.
All those in favor of the oral amendments. I'm assuming everybody has written that down and is okay with it. The language is. All those in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted. What's next? You don't know who this is.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I know you have some other amendments, but I'm wondering if we do have, as Ms. Parker had pointed out, that there's a lot of controversy with Article 9, and I'm just wondering if we should take a look at that now, since we have limited time. And the one piece that Article 9, let's see, I should get a page number for you here, starts on page 85. And 85. And I believe we have a fiscal note that was handed out to us. And I would just want to point that out, how we can have that in the policy bill with the, so if we could just discuss that with the, when we have the fiscal note. And I believe the Senate is looking to not include this section. Mm-hmm. So if we could have discussion on this.
Well, can we hold off on that just a minute, because I've got a couple of short ones here. I don't think the world will stop if we don't get them done, but what about these two?
It's fine, Mr. Chair.
President Kalin has a amendment for line 21.4. I'm assuming these are quick. And
yes, I believe the whole towing discussion should take 5 minutes, depending on Representative Severson and I.
5 to 50, sure.
The second thing is at the bottom of the hour.
Before we go back to the heavy stuff here, I'm counting on you guys just to make simple little things happen. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is the get your stuff back towing bill that has become the abandoned vehicle towing discussion, and I'd like to keep it extremely limited. One of the things that we've done by working with the towers and trying to deal with the global problem as well as the specific problem is make this system more efficient. And so on line 21.4, I'd like to move an oral amendment to delete the word transfers, and replace it with surrenders. So it's line 21.4, delete the word transfers, replace it with the word surrenders. It's a cleaner process than having to, requiring them to go through the title transfer process.
Any discussion on that oral amendment? All right. All in favor of the oral amendment for line 21.4 on page 21, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. President Kalin, I think you have another one here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I believe that we also want to replace the word transfer in line 21.6, thank you, Representative Slocum, with the word surrender. And just looking to the folks in the audience for any contrary indication. Not seeing any, I believe that we do want to do that. So,
all in favor of that amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The oral amendment for the other surrender, another transfer, is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I would like to...
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that does make sense. I think we should ask the people who deal with titles, because I don't think you can surrender your vehicle to another without either giving them the title or transferring the title. But if you have a voluntary surrender in writing, you're saying I'm giving my car to so-and-so. I don't think that's a transfer that's recognized under Minnesota law, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mr. Chair, what I'd like to suggest, Mr. Chair, is Ms. McCormick, I think we'll want to comment very briefly on this whole discussion in 2 seconds, including the amendment that I'm about to offer. And so if we could go through...
Let's take these right now, and we'll either throw them out or go back and do something. Ms. McCormick, do you want to comment on the question here that was raised?
Just to be clear, Mr. Chair, my concern is not about the first amendment that we did, which is line 21, or page 21, line 4, surrender is fine because I think you can surrender your title to somebody and transfer title to your car that way. But at line 6, I don't think you can do a voluntary surrender in writing. I think that would have to be a transfer in writing.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Larry Olola, Vehicle Services Program Director. Representative Portman has a point here in that a voluntary transfer, a vehicle has to be transferred. Otherwise, just the surrender of the title doesn't transfer, isn't the mechanism to transfer the vehicle. So there has to be some mechanism to transfer the ownership of the vehicle.
So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't catch it. The
Olola,
okay. Currently, now, if I have a vehicle that I want to dispose of, that's I had a couple of my son's vehicles that we've had to do this to, where the tow truck drivers come and they tow it away. We give them the title. Do they transfer that title to their name before they dispose of it? Because I think that's what we're looking at doing here. And maybe I'm wrong, but we give them the title. I've transferred it to them, or I've signed it to them, and they take it and dispose of it, junk it, crush it, whatever. They don't actually transfer it into their name. Isn't that what we're doing here with by calling this surrender in both these situations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, it's when you're doing it, you're transferring the vehicle. You're not just surrendering. Depending on what the company that you're transferring that intends to do, if they intend to junk it, then what they would do is that they would then report it to us as a junk vehicle. If they want to resell it, they would then have to be licensed as a dealer in order to resell it. But we do have entities that are licensed just for the purpose of junking the vehicle. But yet, it does require that transfer, not just the surrender. You're not just surrendering, you're actually doing the transfer to that entity's name.
Thank you.
Well, is this correct language or not? Did anybody make a decision here? Can we use that on 21.6? Surrender instead of transfer?
Mr. Chair, I think what the witness is testifying is that surrender is not the right word in either situation because the word transfer means something in the context of motor vehicle titles and the word surrender doesn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, that's correct.
Where were you 5 minutes ago?
You didn't know we were going to try to change title on them. Could I move to undo that amendment then?
Mr. Chair, I'll move to
reconsider.
Reconsider.
All right. I was in favor of reconsidering those two surrender amendments. Signify saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Now, where are we?
Back to the original. Motion to reconsider is approved.
So withdraw your amendment.
Okay, we'll vote again on the. Actually, we have two votes. One on the one on page 21.6. All in favor of.
Merely withdraw my amendments.
Anything
I would do.
Let's let you do that.
I will then like to point you to the motor vehicle title transfer study language that. Was distributed. The issue, Mr. Chair and members, first of all, when the contents retrieval portion that's on page 22, subdivision or section 6 of the bill requires a registered owner of the vehicle to retrieve their contents. What the issue is, the much larger issue here that Representative Severson and I and our friends in the towing industry, both the private and public impound lots, and Legal Aid Society, the larger issue is the abandoned vehicles and this sort of underground market of selling vehicles without transferring title. And many other states do much more efficient systems of title transfer and title systems. And so Representative Severson and I have had several conversations about this over the last month and more, and we're sort of like two magnets that have the same charge that just aren't quite meeting yet, but are very, very, very close. And so I'm going to, rather than offer the amendment, I just wanted to raise the issue and thank Representative Severson for his cooperation and looking at the issue. One of the things that I had considered is making sure that the study was funded through the abandoned vehicle fund that's established in this portion of the bill. If by some good circumstance Representative Severson and I are able to work out before the bill hits the floor an amendment, I would both support to get to this end. We would ask for the committee to support the amendment if we are able to come to that conclusion. We think this may be an interim or a long-term discussion, but thank the towers and Representative Severson for working together. One last thing I'd like to point out before I hand it to Representative Severson is that the abandoned vehicle account, the funding issue that I think we'll hear from, the fiscal impact that I think we'll hear from DPS and DVS will be, is addressed by the increase in the title transfer fee. And we feel fairly confident that we're giving them enough resources to make this project work. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And with all due respect to my colleague, and I thank him for bringing this issue forward, and it is an important issue, but I think what we've done is we've kicked over a rock here that has some endemic problems within our system. Has been heard from some of the towers and some of the parties involved in this. What we've got is people who are buying, who for some reason or other, who don't have a valid license, they don't have insurance, go out and buy a vehicle with 6 to 9 months left on the tabs, drive it around for 6 to 9 months, and then deposit it by the side of the road. Probably don't even go to the towing industry to say, hey, we want this back, because they go find another one with 6 to 9 months on them. This is kind of, you know, what we're doing here is we're saying, let's hit every individual that buys a title here or the process with another $1.50 so that the towers can recover their money. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's not getting to the core of the issue. 2 years ago, we put forth a study because a lot of people aren't buying insurance, and we have a mandatory insurance issue. We did that study, and we found that we were having problems identifying who the uninsured issues are. That goes to this bill as well. Motor vehicle sales tax is another issue. We have these things are transferred sometimes 4 and 5 times without paying the motor vehicle sales tax. That's another part of this issue. So I think one of the things that we've got going on here is people are basically buying and using and abandoning vehicles. This bill does not answer that question. And I guess, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do is I'd like to make an oral amendment to delete Section 2 to start with.
We have another amendment in here.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to, if I don't succeed in deleting Section 2, then I would like to bring that amendment forward.
Section 2.
Section 2?
Is it Article 2, Section 2, Representative Severson? Page 20.
What page?
Page 19. Page 19, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, delete Article 2. I apologize.
Okay.
And to that amendment, Mr. Chair, and I believe that what Representative Caitlin stated previous is what we need to do. We need to get together, come with a viable plan that addresses all of the issues that I stated, and then possibly bring this as an amendment to the floor. And I think we can do that. But I think we need to get together with DPS, and we need to get together with some of the involved parties here. One of the issues I think that needs to be addressed here is how we transfer license plates. And there are numerous states that actually, when you buy the plate stays with the individual. And so when you go in to get that plate, then each year you go in to get a tab, you have to bring in a proof of insurance, and you can't transfer that vehicle without having a plate. So, you know, when that plate gets sold, you take that plate out the vehicle, and if somebody's driving around without a plate on, it kind of signals the police officer that, hey, this person doesn't have a registration on this vehicle.
That has been discussed at length about every other year, I think. But I want to say that we're going to be out of here now. We moved the time up to 11:20 so that everybody can fix their makeup before they get to the House floor for the session. So.
Thank you.
We don't have much longer.
Appreciate it.
Yes, Representative Karen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do appreciate the makeup time as well. It's a very important part of my day before we go to session. As I told Representative Cederson before, that I do oppose his amendment, but think that actually the abandoned vehicles are the issue here. We have a real public problem where we essentially externalize it to the impound lots and then just sort of pretend like we don't have this problem, and we clearly do, and our towers know this, our cities know this, I would oppose the amendment because I think that there's an important need for the outstanding citizens who are poor and do have difficult circumstances, may actually be literally living in their automobiles, after a blizzard of some sort are towed, and if they are the registered owner of the vehicle, they do get their stuff back. We also heard testimony a couple of years ago. Senator Jungbauer had a friend whose husband had died, I believe, and they were not able to get the car was towed, and they were not able to get her wheelchair released from the car. So I do think that there's a need here for the contents issue, but I also agree that solving this license plate title issue actually would get us to that point of really resolving, or coming as close as we can to resolving, the abandoned vehicle issue. So I do oppose the amendment, but appreciate very much the cooperation of Representative Cederson, and obviously we'll continue to...
Representative Horson, did you have a...
Mr. Chair, I think, you know, we've really heard a lot. We've heard this thoroughly, so I don't think there's a need for additional discussion. I would just urge members to also vote no.
Representative Slocum.
I would like to speak in favor of deleting this from this bill because I don't think all the players have been at the table yet. And it came to the floor here. We did listen to some testimony. I think it hurts small businesses. I've argued with Representative Kalin. I think it would be wise to delay this and get people together and work things out in a more equitable way.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask the testifiers, is this workable for your department the way it when you look at it right now?
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, no, it isn't, and I apologize if this bill was on a schedule and we didn't get to the hearing, but we have been working with the people representing the Tours Association for a couple of years because we understand there are major problems that they face. But this is a fiscal note. This is raising $3.45 million. And I wanted to make, we have specific costs, but it also, this is really not within DVS's mission to have a fund like this where we're taking claims and paying out claims. So it's not really the type of administration that DVS would normally be doing in terms of its mission and its business process. But in addition to the issues that were also raised this morning, we agree that it needs to be studied and we need all the players at the table. The concern we have is certainly there's always different things we need to look at in terms of how vehicles are transferred and the title transfer process, but this would be talking about revamping our entire tax structure as well. If you're talking about taking states that transfer plates are flat tax states. We're not a flat tax state. So and we have told that to the representatives of the towing association before, that then you need to bring different players to the table, like the Department of Revenue, as well as have the legislative representatives and the governor's office, because that would be a major change in terms of how our registration and titling process works. So this is a large issue, and we support the fact that the towers need some resolution to their issues. We understand that, but this would not, in our mind, be workable in DVS.
Representative Holbrook.
Mr. Chair, two things. First, I'm wondering if Representative Severson would consider amending his motion to allow Section 13 on page 24 to stand. I do not think that was controversial at all. In fact, necessary given tow trucks towing big trucks.
I would accept that as a friendly amendment.
I'm going to support the amendment to delete this section with the exception of Section 13. And Representative Kalin, I know that you're really concerned about people, their medical equipment, those types of things in the car. You know, maybe we can get at that issue this session with an amendment on the floor that would list out particular personal items that are vital to survival that can be retrieved from a car. Somebody holding somebody's wheelchair seems a little extreme to me as well, and maybe we can deal with that. But I think this is unworkable the way it is.
Mr. Burris is making a suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, members, just so that you're aware, this article also contains MnDOT's towing authority provisions in sections 2, 11, and 12. Just not sure if it would be your intent with the amendment to delete those sections as well.
Yeah, I would accept that as a friendly as well.
Where are we?
2, 11.
Yeah, Mr. Burris, you have an amendment now that would remove section Article 2?
Article 2, except those exceptions that were stated on page 24.
Okay.
Mr. Burris just stated. Could you give us that specific location again, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, the amendment, if I understand correctly, would now lead to delete sections 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 14.
Article 2.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, that's also what I have. Those are the sections that pertain to my bill.
Is there any other discussion on this for the moment? No? What? Okay. Mr. Bruce, would you repeat what is left?
No. Mr. Chair, members, the sections that would remain are 2, 11, 12, and 13.
Mr. Chair? Sorry, just when we're ready to...
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reiterate a couple of things about the sections that we're proposing deleting. I've worked very carefully and very thoroughly with the towers. In fact, one of my constituents and I had a discussion a couple of times on Saturday, on my cell phone even. I've given them a lot of opportunities to have input and included the fund and the Section 13 that Representative Holberg insightfully grabbed and make sure that that's not in question here. And this is actually providing a lot of reimbursement for the public service that for which these mom and pop towers are actually not compensated for now and currently increase their fees as a result of. And so this is
really a bill that will do well for our towers and our businesses. I know that they are concerned a little bit about perceiving it as a mandate. What it actually does is clarify that the retrieval of contents is not a subjective thing on their part, but that they have the clear authority to, under statute now, to require that someone is a registered owner. And so just really urge a no vote on the amendment, but appreciate, again, with all due respect to Representative Stevenson, appreciate the ability to work together and appreciate Representative Holberg's indication that she'd be willing to work together as well.
Are we ready for a vote?
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we're a little confused. What is the amendment we're going to vote on, keeping that in or taking some out?
Mr. Burris, can you refresh our memory here?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment currently is page 19, delete section 1. Page 20, delete section 3. Page 21, delete sections 4 to 5. Page 22, delete sections 6 to 8. Page 23, delete sections 9 to 10. And page 24, delete section 14.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question to that, Mr. Chairman. On page 23, at the top of the page, sets a fee of up to, or not to exceed, $25 a day. What are the fees some of these folks are paying now? Can you give me some examples of this, Kaylin, and just what they're charging now, and also the other $75 fee in there?
Mr. Chair and Representative Magnus, I believe that Section 8 that you're referring to only refers to the deficiency claim that would be used to access the abandoned vehicle fund currently. So the fees that they're collecting right now are zero. Okay. So it is not my intention at all to regulate rates one bit, because that's what the market does, and successfully. But of course, the rates that all of the rest of us are paying, who do pay for our vehicles if we ever get towed, we absorb the cost currently the abandoned vehicle account will compensate them for.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think when law enforcement takes vehicles as part of their enforcement, there seems to be a wide disparity among that around the state, and I'd like to get a little discussion about that sometime, Mr. Chairman, because I get letters from folks and you've got a $600 car, maybe, and the locals have grabbed it and won $800 back to get the car, and here we get with the problem here. So that adds to your problem with all these vehicles that are going, and that Representative Severson talked about too, when we have vehicles, because remember in my area we've got a lot of poor folks that are just coming in, and they do that. They'll pay $300 or $400 or $500 for a vehicle because it has time left on the tabs, and then somewhere it's going to sit someplace, and then you've got this whole process to work through. So we need to get a handle on this somehow and get it worked out.
Representative Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Magnus. That is an issue, and I think that's something that we can work together on to address in the future. Our hopes is that we can get together, talk about these issues, and then bring it to the committee, whether we come to the committee or we take it to the floor as an amendment and talk with everybody involved, that we can kind of resolve this issue. I think we're moving in the right direction on this.
Let's move then. Are we ready for a vote?
We are ready, Mr. Chair.
All in favor of the amendment, does anyone need that repeated?
No.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I think the ayes have it. So the motion is adopted. Next amendment is 351DE1.
I never got that.
Ms. Parker, I think this may be one of your time and I.
Oh,
yes. Representative Hornstein, I think this is your amendment. Yes.
don't have it before me. I don't know if you have it.
What?
DE1. I'm surprised. I'm just trying to get it. Yes. Okay. Does the committee have a copy of this?
We do.
With all the writing on it?
Ready to roll.
Okay.
We're not getting much time for testimony on the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the original 1351, and this is an example of stakeholders in MnDOT coming together very successfully and productively. I know that it seems like the rap on this bill is that it's got a lot of studies, but members, you know, this relates a lot to some of the issues that have been in the news a lot, such as, you know, global warming, various environmental issues, congestion. This is more of a planning document. It's very needed. MnDOT agrees. There's a minimal fiscal impact. And again, the stakeholders work very productively together, so I would hope for unanimous adoption of this amendment. And Ms. Parker can speak to the very fruitful negotiations and discussions we had yesterday.
Ms. Parker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Betsy Parker from MnDOT. Representative Hornstein is correct. We sat down yesterday with the Director of our Office of Environmental Services and the Director of our Planning Unit in our Office of Investment Management and some representatives of environmental groups, and we agreed on what would be appropriate amendments to this language. The benefits of the amendments to Representative Hornstein's bill are that we are actually going to do a good deal of the work that's already described in this bill. We've already begun to plan for redoing the statewide transportation plan, and this language strengthens the authority and the obligation of the department to consider effects of energy issues and environmental issues in a way that people at MnDOT thought was very appropriate. And if you look at parens 5 and 6 listed here under the issues about the study, some of that work will also be done under the study that the governor has proposed of looking at a mileage-based system for receiving transportation revenue, and that is funded in the governor's funding bill. And the language here has been worked out in a way that we feel enables us to combine this with existing work that we are doing. And so we are quite comfortable with this language.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to have to fit this into the bill. And this fits in on page 17, section 29. And I think what you would want to do with this is to delete section 9 and 29 as it exists in the bill, and then replace it with this language. Does that make sense, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mr. Burris.
He is Representative Burris today.
Mr. Chair and members, I would agree with that, and was actually just getting ready to offer a technical suggestion to that effect, so that this amendment would be orally changed, so that with three changes, so that the effect of the amendment would be to replace what's currently in the omnibus. The first change would be on page 1, line 1, so that after 1351, it would read the delete everything amendment,
yep.
H1351DE2, comma, and then delete page 1, delete line 2, and insert page 17, delete section 29, and insert colon. And then page 1, line 3, delete the number 1 and insert the number 29. And that language would have this amendment with its written changes go into the omnibus bill.
Yeah, there it is.
And Mr. Chair,
how's that everybody?
Yeah, members, this is important so that our bill is clean and presentable and in addition to the policy contained in the amendment as well.
Mr. Burris, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burris, do we also want to delete line 1.26?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that, it's technicality, but...
Mr. Chair, members, you could do it either way.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Mr. Burse, I missed the part between adding DE2 on line 1.1 and then changing on 1.3 to 1 to a 29. Are you deleting line 1.2 of the amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, yes. It would delete line, page 1, delete line 2.
Thank you.
Insert page 17, delete section 29, and insert colon.
Thank you.
Other questions? Comments? Ms. Parker, did were you able to find the planning director and the environmental person that I knew that Representative Hornstein was coming over?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they were eager to be involved.
Okay. Are there any other questions on this amendment, or can we vote on it? Let's vote on it. All in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Okay. Well, I think we're almost at the end, except for Representative Hornstein wants to say a few words. We didn't take any testimony from the audience. There isn't anybody out there that's raised their hand.
Mr. Chair,
I'm just a question here. I've got three amendments left on my desk, the A13, the A9, and the JLA01. Are we going to take those up at all? Some of them I'd prefer not to, but I'd love to talk about the A13.
Well, we really don't have time. So it's too bad. Next year, we'll take it up. Take them up.
I do understand that these are the three that are still on the table, and we're not going to take them up.
I don't have them on my table. So, Representative Hornstein, would you complete the bill, please?
Well, Mr. Chair. I think we do need to get the session. I want to make sure that members are comfortable that their concerns and needs have been met. I'm also sensitive to the fact that people have a lot of other commitments, after session. But if people need more conversation, I leave that up to the committee. I think we've gotten a lot done today, this morning, a lot more than I'd anticipated. I'm helping out the cause by withdrawing the AO1 amendment. I want to make sure that we have good process and that members feel comfortable. If we need to meet after session, I guess we need to. But my preference would be not to, but I leave that up to the committee.
Okay. If there are other amendments, this is going to finance. And we could add other amendments at that time, but unless we want to come back at 1:30, which I don't think any of us want to do. Yes, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Hornstein withdrawing that AO1 amendment. And as far as 13 and 9, the A13, I'd be happy to take those up on the floor or do something there discuss those.
We can offer them in the next committee because this has got a little ways to go yet.
Thank you.
That's the overarching finance committee that we're talking
good
about.
Good luck getting amendments offered in that committee, I hear, Mr. We'll see it on the floor.
Are there any other comments? Yes, that's the word.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned earlier, Article 9 is still quite controversial.
Yes.
But I do have... There is a fiscal note that's on it, and I wonder if Representative Hornstein, you could just even probably tell us what dollars or where in the bill we could find what dollars would actually be coming out of the state fund. Because I do have this fiscal note, which I can pass around.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'll call on Ms. Zewers or Mr. Burris to discuss that. We had a lengthy conversation about that yesterday. They can report on that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, if the question is to the overall fiscal impacts that are in the bill as it currently is amended,
it's going to be some time before we can get you an answer because there were a number of provisions that had fiscal impacts that were removed.
No, Mr. Chair,
the question is just to
related to Article 9. To
Article 9.
Right. And Mr. Chair, while that's being passed about, I just, there's been so much controversy on it, and MnDOT does object to Article 9. I'm just wondering if it really needs to be in the bill, where if this is something that we could work on over interim and be able to work out between the railroads and the union. Seems that we haven't come to kumbaya yet on that.
Mr. Chairman, In light of the time, Mr. Chairman, I move we adjourn. Let's get to the floor, and we'll fight this on the floor. Any other amendments or anything else we'll talk about on the floor later on. Full tax
petition.
We should
pass the bill first.
That's the one. Mr. Chairman, I withdraw that amendment with us. Withdraw my motion. Let's pass the bill first.
Okay. All right. Are there any other comments? Not a perfect bill, but one that will be more controversial as it goes along.
Mr. Chair, thanks to everybody. We have a combination of good policy, some controversy, which isn't all that bad, and which is healthy, I think, for the process. But I really appreciate everyone's time, their efforts. The staff, Ms. Mahon did a great job, Ms. Lucas, our page, Ms. Maher, I appreciate everyone's work, and of course, our nonpartisan staff, and I thank the committee and would urge support and adoption of House File 1351.
All right, the motion is move House File 1351 as amendment to Finance Committee. All in favor of that amendment?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted, and next we will see you over on the floor. Thank you all. Thank you.